Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to day three of the California Council of the Blind Conference and Convention. My name is Steve Bauer. I am CCB Secretary, and I will be your presiding officer, as they say here, for the morning session. Some great stuff coming up today. Later this afternoon, we are going to hear some interesting stuff for all you sports fans. Be around for this afternoon. History fans, the same thing. This session goes this morning until noon, and then we'll take a break for lunch. We'll have the afternoon session starting at 1 o'clock. Our banquet will be on tonight at 5 p.m. So hope you'll be there for awards and lots of fun. And we will, after the banquet, we're going to have our CCB hospitality room, virtually, of course. And I want to thank Joe Green, our membership committee chairman, for taking care of that. And that'll be immediately after the banquet this morning. And that will be on the pre-convention Zoom that all of you have. So the pre-convention Zoom link, if you want to get on and just have a good time, a good chat after the banquet, that's happening tonight, immediately afterwards. So I want to thank you all for being here. We've got some good things coming up today. A big part of today will be our governmental affairs report with our crack advocacy team talking about the things that, and there's a lot happening. Also, we're going to hear from Penny Forward, a company that specializes in teaching blind folks about financial literacy. That's coming up later today. And of course, Scott Thornhill in just a few minutes with ACB. And he will be giving us the lowdown on what's happening at our national organization. But we're going to start off this morning with something we used to do on Friday night. We're going to try it Saturday morning this year, and that's our In Memoriam, where folks are able to talk about members of their chapter or members of the CCB family who have passed, pay tribute to them. And so if you have someone that you would like to talk about that's left us in the past year, raise your hand, and Marianne will call on raised hands when we have any, and we'll do that here for just a few minutes before we go to Scott. So, do we have any hands,
We
Marianne?
do.
Okay.
We do. Go ahead, Robert.
Good morning, everybody. This is really hard for me because the person has been in CCB a long time and was my chapter president for a long time. And last Saturday, Michael Conrad passed away. And Michael was really instrumental in maintaining the Long Beach chapter and supporting the Long Beach chapter, bringing in lots of members. I mean, he really, at least at the local level, was super, super active in his chapter, and he's going to really, really be missed. That's it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Robert. He will be missed. Okay. Any other hands?
No, not currently, Steve.
Okay.
Oh, well, we got somebody just popped their hand up.
Yeah, that always happens.
That's true. Go ahead, Gene.
Good morning. My name is Gene Lozano, and I just would like to say just a very few words about Donna Brown, who was a member of the ACB Capital Chapter for several years. She passed away on December 30th of 2024.
Excuse me, Gene. Robert, could you mute, please? Okay, thank you, Gene. Go ahead.
Sure. And Donna participated in a lot of the social events because of her health last 10, 15 years, she wasn't to be able to be as active. But I have learned since her passing of from a lot of individuals that knew her in the community in Sacramento that she was taught a lot of people about the abilities of people with low vision and those who were totally blind on different techniques, and educated, decided as to what things could be done and just everyday living skills and independent skills. And that was something there. And she always gave encouragement to people. And especially, to, again, to some of them who had full vision, who, you know, immediately were terrified the thought about they ever lost their vision. And Donna reassured them and told them that, you know, there's things that could be done. And also she met people who had the vision disabilities, encouraged them to join CCB. So she's greatly missed. I've known her since 1976 when she was a student at Sacramento State University. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have Frank Welt. Frank, go ahead.
Hello. I'm calling to remember a member of the San Francisco chapter, Beth Berenson, who passed away earlier this year. Beth was a longtime member of the chapter, and she was very much a person who cared. She cared much about people, and she especially cared about dogs. For any of you who had dogs at recent conventions, you probably met Beth, because she was a dog magnet. She was a person with a great heart and a great soul, and we're going to miss her, but we were very grateful to have known her.
Thank you, Frank. We have any others?
No, sir.
Okay. One more call if anybody would like to remember a member of our CCB family who has passed. This is the time for that.
If anyone is on the panelist side, they don't need to unmute. They can just talk. So,
right.
I mean, they don't need to raise their hand. They can just.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, hearing none, we will move forward. And some of you know we're really excited to have something new we're doing this year, and that is the Chapter of the Year. We're playing all of the entries we got throughout the convention, and then tonight at the banquet, we're going to play them all over again. You'll have a chance to hear them one more time tonight at the banquet, and you'll have a chance to vote. And I don't think I've told our Zoom host that we're doing that, but we're going to keep her busy tonight. So right now, let's go ahead and play our next Chapter of the Year submission.
The goal of the ACB Capital Chapter California Council of the Blind is to have something that all of our members can enjoy. We do this in several ways. First, we have three monthly events. Of course, we have our meeting. Then we have our monthly bingo, which does bring in a little money for the chapter, but is primarily for fun. We have cookies and candy and other yummy prizes and even the occasional goofy stuffed animal. Secondly, we do a lot of advocacy, whether it's with our transportation district, our county on a number of areas, and even city government as well. Finally, we work with our local senior center, a community of caring, otherwise known as ACC, to integrate our community into the services that they provide. There are items that are exclusively for blind and low vision members of the Sacramento community, like our game day. There are others that are targeted to our community, like walks, although they serve the other people in the community as well. Finally, we also help to integrate members and non-members alike into mainstream classes that the senior center offers. So our mantra, as I said at the beginning, is to have something that helps members and even non-members in our community. And I think we do an excellent job.
All righty. Thank you very much. And great to hear and to have on display all the cool things that are happening with our various chapters up and down the state here. So very good. Okay. Let's see. Is Lisa on the attendee side?
She is.
Okay, can we can we bring her up so we can, because she's the door prize lady. So
yep, we'll do.
We want her to be able to do those door prizes.
There you go, Lisa.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So we're ready for a door prize?
We are. We're always ready for a door prize.
Okay, let's do a $25 Starbucks card from CCB. And the winner is Jordan Miranda. Congratulations, Jordan.
Right. Congratulations, Jordan. All right. Let's do one more.
Okay. Let's do it. Let's do $25 for Target from IDC.
Okay.
And the winner is Joe Smith. Congratulations, Joe.
All right. Very good. Well, we will have lots more of those and throughout the day, like I say, in this session this morning and this afternoon, and then, of course, tonight at the banquet. So let's see. We're running a little ahead of schedule, which is unusual, but that's fine. Let me see here. Looking on the attendee side. Is Scott here yet?
I'm looking.
Okay.
I'm looking. No, he's not. He is not here yet.
Okay, he's actually not scheduled for another few minutes, so I'm jumping the gun here. But anyway, we will hear from Scott. I got a chance to meet Scott when he was pretty new on the job at the DC Leadership Meeting, not this year, but last year. The guy is just doing great things for ACB, and I'm so glad that he's taking the time to come and talk to us today. About ACB advocacy efforts, of which there are a lot of things going on. And then, of course, after that, we'll hear from our state folks, the advocacy team right here in California, doing some good stuff. So let's see. Yeah.
We have a raised hand on the attendee side.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take the hand.
Go ahead, Nellie.
I wanted to, I was a little late in the recognition of people who passed away. May I speak in memory of somebody?
Of course. Of course. Please do.
Okay. We had a lovely member of the Active Blind Inland Valleys chapter, and that was Kathy Delzer. And she was so wonderful, happy, bubbly, loved to play music games at our Christmas parties, was really into a lot of fun things. She was very creative, and she made these wonderful scented creams and did a lot of things that were very creative. And she was really helpful in our chapter and just full of life, and passed away last May due to serious, very aggressive cancer. And we miss her very, very much. Thank you.
And we have Andrea with her hand raised.
Okay. Thank you, Nellie. And go ahead, Andrea.
Go ahead, Andrea.
Hey, I think I'm unmuted.
You are.
Okay. I want to just make a slight correction. Her name is Karen, not Kathy. Karen Delzer. And I wanted to suggest to Steve that if you might want to take more convention memories, if, you know, if we have time to do that.
Okay. Yeah, that was a fun thing we were doing last night, interspersed among the voting. We were talking about folks' memories of past conventions. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, we've got actually about 15 minutes until Scott's scheduled to be here. So maybe if anybody does have any other memories like that, it's a good idea, Andrea. We can invite people to raise their hands. In the meantime, Larry, can I put you on the spot? Can we do one more of the chapter of the year?
Yep, sure, no problem. It's all Bakersfield right. Coming up.
Yeah. All right.
Hi, my name is Penny Valdivinos, representing Greater Bakersfield. I am the vice president, and what we're working on right now is trying to get the APS signals, which are audio pedestrian signals, in all the important intersections in town. We also have a family picnic every May to promote the health. And we work with the Independent Living Center of Kern County to mentor anyone that's going blind that goes there. And we also help them with, I call it recycling, you know, CCTs and stuff like that. So we do that. If we get a hold of one given to us, we make sure that they know it so that we can give it all out.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, do we have any hands up? Anybody want to share any more convention memories?
Yep. They just popped up.
Okay. Let's go for a couple.
Okay. Andrea, go ahead.
Okay. I am back. And I have attended 10 national conventions since 2010. So I've only missed, I missed New York. Let's see. I missed Ohio in 2013. I missed New York in 2019, and I missed Schaumburg in 2023. Other than that, I have been to everyone. And I want to just encourage people, not only because of what is amazing about convention, Just the sense of connection and community that I have found at national convention. State conventions are, of course, wonderful too, but the last few years we've done more virtual than in person. And although virtual is terrific, and I think it's here to stay as it should be, I love being in person with people and meeting folks that I've maybe heard on community or worked with on community or had. I've been fortunate enough to be involved in community for the last almost 5 years now. I'm one of the earlier hosts in community, but just to meet them. But the other aspect of convention is you get to see parts of the country that you wouldn't necessarily go to on your own. One of the best experiences that I had, and this was with my former husband, some of you remember him, in 2012, we went to Louisville. And Don didn't normally travel with me to convention, but he went to a couple. He went to Louisville and he went to Las Vegas. And he went to Louisville because he wanted to learn about the history. There's a lot of Civil War history there, which was a passion for him. And so we went on the Amish country tour, which was one of the last tours of that week. And it was just fabulous. The food was amazing. The woman who was our tour guide for the day was very informative and was willing to answer almost any questions people had. And I was astounded at some of the questions people had the nerve to ask. But and she was dressed in her Sunday costume that they would wear of clothing for a church. This is a way they raise money because the communities are shrinking and they don't have the financial base that they had. So they're allowing people to come in. We got to touch the furniture. We got to see the buggies. It just was a really fascinating, and it's such an interesting community in our country. And I would have never gotten the chance to see that if not for traveling to Kentucky to go to convention. So I encourage folks who maybe haven't and are able to go, not only for the convention itself, but for the opportunity that you get to see different parts of our country. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Andrea. And I wholeheartedly agree. I have to count how many conventions I've been to. I haven't been quite as regular as you, but I've been to a dozen or so since over the last 40 years. And yeah, I remember the first one. It was just mind-blowing. All of a sudden, you know, 1,000 people that are, you know, doing with a lot of the same situations that you are. Marianne, how many more hands do we have?
You have one more.
Okay, let's take that one. And then I see Scott's here, so we'll go to Scott after that.
Okay, area code 970, go ahead. 970.
Hi, this is Catherine. Okay, hi, this is Catherine Johnson, and I wanted to echo everything that Andrea just said, because she summed it up really well, and that was very meaningful for me also, and the tours that ACB provides are a wonderful experience, and you also get to do things that you never would have been able to do because I would travel with my family and we'd fly to different destinations, but we never got to, you know, drive to, you know, different cities within states and visit. So that's something that I really look forward to every year when I attend. I have not attended in the last few years, but I'm hoping to attend again soon. My first convention was in 1996, and it was in Tulsa, and it was so meaningful to me that I loved it and wanted to attend conventions in the future. And so that's what sold me on ACB. I wanted to talk just a second about CCB. I really enjoyed coming. The first time I came, it was in Sacramento, and this friend of mine, Nancy Unger, invited me, and I'm from Colorado, so it was my first California Council of the Blind convention, and I met there a lot of people, but the person that stood out was Kathy Skivers. She came up to me in the hospitality room and was so gracious and kind and genuine and welcoming that I told her I was going to join CCB before I left convention, which I did. And so I just wanted to impress upon everyone that it's the welcomingness of CCB that gets new people to come. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And don't forget, speaking of hospitality rooms, tonight we're going to have our virtual hospitality room right after the banquet. We'll be going back to the pre-convention Zoom that we used, and that will be sent out for those of you who don't have that link later on today. So that'll be fun tonight.
Steve, are you done taking hints for now? You have one more.
I'd like to.
Rob, you want to say something?
I know we've got about 8 minutes, so I'll make this real quick. And it's I apologize for not tuning in sooner. I had forgotten that I'm talking about one of our chapter members named Noel Runyon.
Yes, and yes.
Noel was well known for his work with personal data systems. He developed some software for the open book at that time called EasyScan, which was in the DOS environment. He attended our social hours, and the guy was a genius. I mean, he just had so much knowledge, and, you know, we really would learn something each week from him. And his death was very sudden. It was a real shocker, some kind of cancer of the blood. So I just would be remiss if I'd forgotten to announce that in the memoriam. And again, I just hadn't realized. I lose track of time sometimes. His death was after the previous convention. But yeah, thanks for giving me the chance.
Oh, of course. And I have to chime in just very briefly because I'm showing my age here, but I met Noel Runyon in 1980 when he worked for Telesensory. And I will remember that because, and I won't tell the whole story right now, but let's just say that it was a very difficult technology. This new radio guy bought a Braille printer and wanted to hook it up to UPI to get wire copy news that I could read on the air. And it was a struggle, but we got there. And major thanks to Noel, because he actually flew down to Santa Barbara from Palo Alto or wherever TSI was. And I was reading the news, but not without Noel. So that was I've always appreciated that. Okay. Let's see. We got one
just
more hand. You
one hand on this side. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's. And I Artis wanted to speak too. I don't know if is she on the attendee side or
she's on your side. So okay. She just can go ahead.
Okay. Let's go ahead with the hand quickly, and then okay. Artis, and then we'll go to Scott.
Go ahead, Sheila. Sheila Gunn. Go ahead.
I don't have anybody that has newly passed on, but I just listening to convention memories. I remember how I came into CCB, and how I came into CCB was I was an OCB student, and Al Gill, a lot of us know him. I guess I should say knew him, but I feel like I'll always know him. I just don't know where he is now. He passed a few years ago. He was the rehab counselor stationed at OCB, and he was quite a character. He was a very wonderful example and a very wonderful he was forgiving, but he'd pull your tail if you hadn't, you know, if you were supposed to be doing stuff and you weren't doing it. But he was also he loved music, and what I remember, which is not a convention memory, but I just he got this boombox, and he got the Time Life Christmas Treasures set, and this song, what is it? And Mary's boy child Jesus Christ was born on Christmas Day. That song by Harry Belafonte. Between the two of us, Al Gill and me, and Harry Belafonte, we had a three-part harmony going, and Al recorded that. And I wish to God that I'd gotten a copy, because it was really cool. Anyway, I just thought it was a fun memory that could be had.
Well, thanks, Sheila. Artists, real quick, we don't want to keep Scott waiting too long, but what's going on?
Yes, I was so happy that ACB allowed children to come. I first went to my first convention in 1985, and I did not, you know, bring the kids there because that was Las Vegas. But in 1987, we brought our kids to Los Angeles, and it was so wonderful because my husband and I could go to sessions and the kids would have fun at their activities. And we could sign up for tours. And for 10 years, we went to a lot of tours when my children were along. And it was a way for them to see the country that we would not have felt comfortable taking them along on those tours by ourselves. So that was a great thing. I do have one funny story. One year, I decided to bring a bottle of Amana Colony's dandelion wine along to bring to the president's suite. You know, he would invite people to come. And I brought it there, and nobody could stand it. They thought it was the worst wine ever.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Artis. All right. Well, going to move on here, and we are totally privileged to have an ACB report here from Scott Thornhill. I don't want to go too much into this, but we talked about convention experiences. I will recommend the DC Leadership, or I guess it's called the ACB Leadership Conference now, which usually happens in February or March. That's a whole other experience. But that's where I met Scott a year ago, 2024. He'd been on the job for a few weeks, and it was trial by fire for him. I was uncertain. I was like, who is this new guy they brought in as executive director? And that uncertainty lasted about 90 seconds until he started talking, and he really proved to us, at least to me that weekend, that he was one of us. And he's been with us for more than a year now, and to say full speed ahead is an understatement. There's lots going on. So, Scott, thank you for joining us. And oh, and one thing I want to mention, I forgot to mention earlier, is throughout the day, as our presenters, we'll, of course, have time for questions from Zoom. If you'd rather email your question, Rob is here, and he will be checking ask@ccbnet.org. That's ask at ccbnet.org. And if you'd rather email your questions for our various presenters, that's what you can do. Scott Thornhill, Executive Director of ACB, thanks for joining us this morning, or this afternoon, I guess, for you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. So hello to all my California Council friends. And I want to let you know up front, I am in a moving vehicle. So if I fade in and out, I hope not. But if I do, I promise I'm still around. So and it's not an autonomous vehicle, and I am not driving, so we're good. it's an honor to be here, and I appreciate the invitation, and happy to give a update on a few of the things going on at ACB. It'd be very challenging to give a comprehensive update since there are so many moving parts. I'm still, after a year, I still learn something new probably, you know, once a week or at least a couple times a month, where I'm like, oh, we do that. Okay, how long have we done that? This long. But why are we still doing that? Or why are we not? You know, so it's still a much of a learning process for me, but it is an honor to be here. So let me just give a brief overview on a few of the different things we're doing, and then some of the things that I've been doing myself recently, because occasionally based on Facebook or something else, people will ask me questions, or, oh, I saw you were traveling, and what's up with this or that. And so I can touch on a few of those items as well, because there are some very exciting things going on. Under the advocacy side, which I know you'll hear more about from others later on, but on the advocacy side of things, we are staying busy in the Washington area with federal government items happening. And so we are continuing our legislative imperatives, which were spoken about at that DC Leadership Conference, as you noted. So we're continuing to work on those items. Those tend to be sort of long-term, or at least intermediate goals and those legislative imperatives. So we don't want to stop working on those. We had some questions around DC leadership about whether or not we should not focus on those and simply talk about sort of the current environment or exactly what the path forward would be. And we made a real conscious decision to say yes and on that. Is that yes, we understand some people are apprehensive or have had some, there are some lots of feelings, lots of opinions about things. And we acknowledge that and we understand that. We want to hear that. We also look at that long picture, the big picture of what are those legislative imperatives that we've been asking for that we're still going to continue to fight for and move ahead with on coalitions. And these take sometimes several years. So what we don't want to do is leave them behind and then have to start over with education and all of that and rebuilding the coalition some period of time down the road. So it's a comprehensive effort from that standpoint for us. And so we're tracking, of course, things going on with the Department of Education and HHS and other items. I do tell people this often is that we will never get information out to you as quickly as another member of ACB will get it to you from some source on one of our email lists. Let me just make that promise. We will never get it out that quickly. And the reason is that we really do, and I work with Claire Stanley a lot on this, we want to be very factual in what we put out. We're doing our best not to really put out sort of personal feelings about things. If we have an opinion from an ACB standpoint about what the impact may be of something, we certainly will share that, but we want to be very careful about what we share because we do understand that people will take information and share it with others. And we certainly don't want anything with our name on it to be found to be sort of speculative in nature. So I hope everyone understands that process, but I joke about it because I'll get told about something three times before you know, Claire and I can really put it together how we want to send it out to the membership. So, and I certainly think people understand why that is that we're being so deliberate about that process. So a lot happening there, certainly in the states as it relates to the libraries, as it relates to still some voting elements in various places. We've got our ear to the ground on that. I will say, hearing Artis just before coming on, and just so Artis knows, I would always wait for Artis to speak before I would ever come on to speak. I appreciate her work and I had an honor. It was an honor to be at Sagebrush with the Randolph Shepherd vendors a little bit ago. And I will say we had a scare in Tennessee regarding Randolph Shepherd, and there are some other states considering the same. So we have the federal Randolph Shepherd legislation around the vendors and blind preference there. And then the states have what many refer to as the mini Randolph Shepherds, MINI, right? Meaning the small Randolph Shepherds. And from a state standpoint, so having facilities in state buildings or municipalities. And so some of the states, a couple that we've heard of, and Tennessee was one of them, had considered sort of doing away with that state preference. And thankfully, it didn't happen in Tennessee, but we know that Illinois was considering it and maybe one or two others. And so we do like to be updated. So if anyone has information from California or if you're in another state, and you hear of something going on, please let us know. Just email advocacy@acb.org and let us know, because it is very challenging to obviously to keep up with 50 states plus the federal government plus what municipalities may be doing. So, but that's the advocacy front. We continue to just that's a never ending process and one that frankly Claire enjoys tremendously. I joke with her about how long things take. And she said, "Oh, I just love the chug of government." And I was like, I don't know many people that would say that. I want things to happen. I want them to happen now, but this doesn't work that way a lot of the time. We started a new program area, our accessibility and training services area, which Colby Garrison leads that. She's our accessibility and training services coordinator, doing a tremendous job. And so in that area, we have a new partnership with the NFL, which many of you may have heard about. And so the National Football League. So we're working with them on their digital assets, on websites, also working with them on in-person experiences and what that is like for people who are blind or with low vision. So they're looking for good feedback from us on that. And you'll see more information or have more information coming about that in our various publications. but we are truly honored and just really excited about the partnership with such an iconic brand like the NFL. And in that same department, we're working with entities on making sure that their websites are working the way they're supposed to, that they're accessible. And also, if as a member, or even if you're not a member, but you have an issue happening, please email accessibility@acb.org. So what we're doing is we have members or others that are contacting us and saying, hey, this app is not working the way that it should or the way that it used to, or this website or this product that I got is not, you know, as advertised or whatever it might be. And I can't use it as someone who is blind or with low vision. And so then Colby is tracking that down, going to the company and saying, you know, we have a member or we have someone in the blindness community who's struggling with this and we need more information. And sometimes, frankly, we find out that it's a little bit of user training or knowledge that needs to happen, that the individual just needs to understand a little bit better about apps or about how to do something. But many other times we're finding out that it truly is an issue with an app or a website or a product itself. And then we can pursue that and help individuals get that solved. Because if it's happening to you, it's probably happening to many others who aren't speaking up. And so please email that accessibility@acb.org email address. I will also say, and I under the advocacy and the accessibility and training services, but really under advocacy, we've managed to have a couple of great interns from the University of California system. So thank you, California, for sending us terrific interns. They have a program called UCDC, which is the University of California, obviously in DC. And so they actually have a dorm and a classroom facility in the district where individuals who are selected from the various California universities come and do an internship. And so the way that the California system works, there are quarters, not really semesters per se. And so we had someone for the winter quarter, and now we have Kyla, and now we have Mia for the spring quarter. And so we hope that relationship will continue because they're doing tremendous work for us and helping Claire with things, helping Colby with things, and really just real assets to our team. Beyond that, as we get into ACB Media, and many of you know, of course, about what's happening with our 10 streaming channels, and we're getting a lot of infrastructure work done, which is not terribly exciting to talk about. And frankly, if I were to try to talk about it, I guarantee you I'd get something wrong. So I'm not even going to go deep into that. But we're working on the infrastructure so that ACB Media, ACB as a whole, will be around for many, many decades to come, and we'll have the foundation there to handle whatever needs to be done. And so it's not necessarily things, these are not things you're going to maybe notice right away, but they're important. It's kind of like with a house, right? You may get like a new roof, or you get some work done on making sure you don't have, you know, moisture in your crawl space or something, right? But it's not nearly as exciting as redoing a bathroom or a kitchen or something that people are really going to notice. So that's sort of where we are with this, is just making sure that we're good on that infrastructure moving forward for a long time. And hand in hand with that is some scheduling, some new scheduling abilities that will happen for ACB Media related to community, which moves me over into our membership engagement and member services. And community events platform is obviously going strong. And by the convention, I haven't gotten the most recent update on the calculation of what we think it'll be, but near the convention will be around 25,000 community events since 2020, which is obviously just an incredible number. Talk about lemonade out of lemons, came from something that people just wondered, how in the world are we going to navigate this and do this? And out of it came community events platform, and realizing that so many people who are blind or with low vision are isolated. And the fact that on Thanksgiving and on some other holidays, we have an amazing crowd in community just tells us that there are those out there who are just truly enjoying having this community to be a part of and to support them and not have to be alone or, you know, endure something that really should be a joyous time. So we're really excited about the future and the potential of what community can do. And it wouldn't happen without all the volunteers, without all the people that are streaming and hosting and moderating, all the different things that people do. So I just want to say thank you to each and every person who takes their time to support the effort around community. And so you know, gosh, I've talked for however long and I've talked about these things. And then there's so much more that we can get into. I haven't even started talking about the audio description project, right? And we've got the gala coming up in November, November the 13th. And so those awards are being looked at. And of course, the People's Choice Award, you'll have an opportunity to vote on that. But I do want to get to convention, of course. So our convention will be, the virtual portion will begin June the 23rd. And so that'll be a full week of virtual. Then we have what some people like to call that we don't have a convention week, the week of the 30th. I don't buy into that because there's voting on the 30th. We'll have a board meeting on the 4th, and many of us are traveling in between. So I don't call that a week off. So in my opinion, we basically have 3 weeks of convention because the board meeting on the 4th, and we'll go from the 4th through the 11th of July in Dallas at the Hyatt there. And it is going to be incredible. We have our programming is just off the charts. It is so good. Our sponsors that are with us, many will be there in person and supporting us. The exhibit hall is going to be amazing with products and services for people to check out. The Blinded Veterans will be with us again for the second year. So BVA will be joining us again. And just a powerful partnership there. It's really going to be an amazing time to be together. The tours that are being lined up, my goodness, I was listening to the stories of people and their tours from previous conventions. I can tell you, you won't be disappointed by the tours that are going to be available on this one. I'm told there's even going to be a tour of my beloved Dallas Cowboys Stadium, AT&T Stadium. So but there will be a tour there. And despite how those Cowboys are playing of recent, it should still be an incredible tour with the artwork and all the things there at the stadium. And Envision Dallas, which is a facility there that works with people who are blind or with low vision. They just built a new facility that's incredible. And there's a boat tour. I mean, so many things happening. So May 15th, registration for members will open up May the 15th. And so get in there early, great rate at the hotel, $99 a night. I don't know where you can stay for $99 a night these days, except for our convention. So be there. Don't miss it. It really is going to be a great time. And then I wanted to talk just briefly about some of the things that I've just this past week, for example, I flew out to from the North Carolina area out to Phoenix for the Vision Serve Alliance conference, which was held in the Scottsdale area, actually in Paradise Valley. I mean, how much better in Paradise Valley? But it was a wonderful time of networking. And whenever I attend these events, it truly people are like, oh, you know, you. And I'm like, no, I'm representing ACB and I'm there for how can we move our organization forward. And the people that I get to meet and network with and the opportunities that come about, whether it's a new sponsor or it's a new employment opportunity that we can talk about, it truly is a terrific time to make those connections. And so I always encourage our staff as well when they go to these events that those relationships are where so much is done. I'm a firm believer that relationships in every aspect of life are really the key to so many things. So spent some time in that area with that Vision Serve Alliance and got to meet many new folks and then also reconnect with others and firm up some things and worked on some additional sponsorships, which is what I do a lot of spend a lot of time on, just to be blunt. But also got to engage in facilitating a group around leveraging evidence-based data and research. And so how do we make sure that we have the data that we need to really understand the needs of individuals in our community? And so we don't really have the data that some other, let's say, communities have because of being in that medical system and things being supported by whether it's, you know, Medicare or other entities and a lot of research being done. And we don't have that level of research that we need. And so there are organizations working on that. Then I went from Phoenix to Orlando on Thursday and spent one night there because Comcast NBC Universal, the conglomerate, but basically Comcast invited ACB, we were one of three nonprofit organizations that got invited to be at this event, which was just yesterday. They are opening a new theme park called Epic Universe. That is the Universal's new theme park. And so they had a soft launch, so we got to walk around and check out various things. But it was about the accessibility. It was about the innovation, the things that they're doing, and what the feedback we could give to help make things even better moving forward. And they'll officially open May the 22nd. But I again got to make connections and build new relationships with other nonprofits from different groups, affinity groups, in terms of disability, things like that, but all heading towards the same thing, which is that full inclusion and accessibility for individuals. And I couldn't help but make the pun that, you know, we were looking for universal design, right? So we want everything to be open to everybody, and it just so happened that it's at a universal facility. But it, you know, how do we make it so that these things are things that the entire public would enjoy, but yet they are also helping us with accessibility? So, of course, that's similar to what we talk about, the curb cutouts or voice texting and things like that. So, but similar things, but within a theme park. What can you do so that the app, which they want so many of their things to be done through their mobile application. And so, of course, we have to make sure that's accessible and that it has audio description for various things. And we have some really cool new partnerships on audio description, which is part of that accessibility and training services area as well, that some of that information will be coming out soon. And just really excited about those opportunities that we have. And our membership numbers are up, and I would just encourage you, if you know someone, or even if you know someone who knows someone who is experiencing some challenges with their vision, don't hesitate to tell them about ACB, and let's get them connected. Let's get them in through the affiliates, and let's get them, you know, connected. Because I said at my first convention, I'll say it again, you know, we roughly around that 8,000 member number. And I talked about being at 12,000 in 3 years, and people, I think, thought I was probably a little crazy. But if all of us ask one person, you know, to join us at an event or that sort of thing, and only half of them like us, that might be 4,000 new members. And there we're looking at 12,000 people. And it's not just to achieve a number, but it's the lives that are impacted. Because when you look at the community events platform, you look at audio description, you look at employment, you look at these other relationships and these other program areas that we've got in place, lives are truly being changed. Now, I don't want to say, you know, we're changing lives, because that's a bit bit too self-focused. But I will say that lives are being changed. And that's not an exaggeration, because we hear stories often about how people were in a very dark place, and then they got connected, they felt supported, and they just feel so different today. Or they didn't have a job and they learned through community, and now they have a job. Or they joined a chapter and got to meet other people that were going through the same thing they were going through, and now they realize that there is a future for them when they didn't think there was. So don't underestimate in any way the impact you can have on others. And again, I want to say thank you. I appreciate California so much. I look forward to visiting and getting to meet many of you in person, and hopefully I will meet you at the convention. So please come up and say hello. And I'm the big guy with the gray hair and you know, the loud voice sometimes, and so if somebody can point you out to me if you're not able to locate me. So, but I'm happy to answer some questions if we have any.
Okay. Well, boy, I am tired just listening to that. It's got too much going on. This is crazy. But yes, if you have any questions.
We do.
Okay. Then, and just let me say, remind people again, of course, we take raised hands here, and Marianne will call on you. And if you'd rather email your question, you can email to ask@ccbnet.org. ask@ccbnet.org. Marianne, who we got in the room?
We have
first?
Sheila. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm Sheila Gunn, and the question I have, hi, Scott, it's good to meet you, if only virtually at the beginning here. I don't think I can get out to this convention, but I will basically be virtual and enjoy. Anyway, I'm raising my hand because, you know, Pope Francis died and there was this funeral for him, and the ACB community was good enough to tell us that there would be audio description. However, I do not own a TV. I am not interested in owning a TV. I am totally blind and it doesn't do any good. So I was trying to get to the CBS something so that I could watch this thing.
Okay.
And I tried to do it online. Their media player is terrible. I use an Android. Okay. And I use TalkBack. And my frustration was there was not a clear-cut way for me to find an audio channel if I didn't have a TV. And to be honest, most people don't have TVs anymore. I don't have very many paid subscriptions. I don't have any paid subscriptions, unless you call Amazon Prime a paid subscription to something.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to see that, and I wanted to get more feedback, and
yeah.
I couldn't, and I was really frustrated. I even tried with Ira to see if they could find stuff. We found a BBC thing where things were translated, but that's not the same.
Yeah.
And I was frustrated that the only way you could get it is through a TV set.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. So no, could we please do better in the future?
Yeah. I don't know what we, you know, we can certainly get with, you know, CBS or with someone and talk to them about, you know, what they have available. Some of it, you know, some of it, there are obviously rights involved. And so in terms of us carrying something or trying to do something ourselves, that we have a good relationship with NBC in that regard, with a number of things that we've done there. But that's a great suggestion on working with others as well and kind of seeing what we can find that might work, you know, for those who don't have a television set, as you said, in order to access that. So I'll talk with our team, the team, and see what we can find out.
Okay. Next hand.
We have Andrea. Go ahead, Andrea.
I just want to shout out to Scott as my fellow auction bidder. You're certainly a worthy opponent. And I, that was my first exposure to Scott, was hearing him. He's right in there. I'm so sorry. My phone will not shut up. Just in there bidding. And I really appreciate the fact that you were visible as just another bidder at an auction, because I think sometimes the upper echelon, let's say, doesn't, you know, they're not as involved maybe right on that level. And I really, my hat's off to you in terms of being right in there bidding against.
And well, I appreciate it.
The other thing, just darn it. The other thing just quickly is that I'm really happy to have someone, again, who's so active. No matter what our political stripe is, in this time, there's a lot of uncertainty. Yeah. A lot of things are being cut. It seems to some of us that some of those things are kind of arbitrary. My job is very heavily funded by Department of Education funding.
Yeah.
So there are my employer is trying desperately to make sure we have the most current information available. They're actually holding a town hall for their employees, which is wonderful. But I'm in there teaching blind folks to use technology.
Yeah.
And I really feel that this job is important. It's getting people out into the workforce. And I just really appreciate the fact that you're out there along with Colby and Claire and other fine people.
Yeah.
I also volunteer for community, so that's another thing. But I really appreciate that you're out there as a visible presence and helping us. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. It's a joy. I probably do too much on those auctions. My wife, she does like the gift cards, but I might do a little too much on the auctions. I should back off a few times and let, you know, not buy so many things, but thank you.
Okay. Let's ask Rob, do we have any questions coming into our email box?
Not so far, Steve.
Okay. And more hands.
Okay. We have Deborah Armstrong. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Excellent. So I have both a comment and a question. And my comment is, I love the advocacy podcast, but I've noticed that there's a lot of emphasis on what we're doing for you rather than what you are doing for us. And I'd like to see ACB community and the advocacy people get together and do an advocacy series where 1 week there's a community call on how to be an effective advocate on the national level, another call on how to be an effective advocate on the state level, and another call on how to be an effective advocate on the local level. And yes, I know you have the leadership conference, but there are a lot of blind people who are sitting at home who have just a telephone who could be more sure. effective advocating. And there are people like me who work and can't get to the DC leadership yeah. conference. So sure. let's have a community, a series of community calls to get more people involved. Okay. That's my comment. And my question is more general. I'm really curious. The board makes a lot of decisions for ACB, but the executive director also makes a lot of decisions. How is that work divided up? If you could speak to that in general, and I'll go back on mute.
Okay. But that's a very good question, a very interesting question. And a hard one to answer, just to be transparent. So the board is the governing body of the American Council of the Blind, elected by the membership to make obviously certain decisions. So for example, the budget that's done is approved by the board. However, it is put together initially by Nancy Marks Becker, our CFO, and me, but we also get input from the board, from Deb Cook Lewis, for example, in this case, and you know, initially to make sure that we're not, something's not totally off track here that's going to be a problem. And then we actually meet with the budget committee of the board prior to then presenting the final budget. After they have time to review it, it's presented at a meeting for a vote. And so it has to be approved by the board, but obviously it has a staff level of input, and we work hand in hand in that regard. The day-to-day decisions of ACB are typically ones that the executive director would make. So for example, putting out a statement about a particular issue or something along those lines, I would work with Claire if it was an advocacy item, if it had to do with something else, then I would work with Hannah Park, who's our communications coordinator, Mike Johnson, who's our communications consultant, and then Sharon Lovering, who puts out the press releases. So we would work together as a team and make sure we had whatever statement we needed to do. Now, I may run that, you know, by Deb or may not, depending on the situation and what it is. But the executive director and the staff run the day-to-day operations. But then the bigger decisions that talk about the governing of the organization, like obviously, you know, anytime you get to like changing the constitution or bylaws, right, that's going to go in front of the membership or the resolutions. Now, the resolutions actually are a great example of one thing that doesn't even, it involves the board to an extent, but not so much, right? That's the membership voting on something that then has to be carried out for the most part by the staff. Even though the board can also be involved in, carrying out something from a resolution, so it's one of those things where you have to have a good working relationship, but it's not necessarily a black and white all the time in terms of this is the board, this is the executive director, that kind of thing. So we work well together, and believe me, I'm careful. I may push the envelope once in a while, but I'm very mm-hmm. careful, and I know who my boss is, the board. So I make sure that. Before I step out and say something that is potentially going to be controversial or whatever it might be, that there is support there, from the board standpoint. So,
Rob, do we? I'm sorry, my Zoom cut out. I didn't mean to talk over you, Scott. I'm sorry. Tony, if we have any questions.
No,
coming
I was just
in?
Saying, I hope that answers the question. Yeah.
Okay, great. We have any email questions, Rob?
No, not so far.
Okay.
We have area code 650. Go ahead.
That's me, Roger Peterson. I had a response, kind of a response to Sheila Gunn's question. I actually have two TV sets, which is two more than none. And I was really interested in hearing the audio description of the Pope's funeral, And I found that I couldn't separate the audio description from the narration on the TV, which I thought was they were frankly shooting the poop, if you want to know, just two people talking to each other. And they were covering up the audio description. And I really hope that someday in the world we'll have audio description that we can separate from the normal TV channel. And I don't know how possible. Thank you.
You're a little wavy.
I would say that that is something that we're shooting for. One of the issues that we have is, I say we, but it's not really ACB per se, but it's the technology realm. So most of us currently would get audio description through that SAP, that alternative programming, which also often carries Spanish language. And so that's why we had success. One of the reasons we've had success with NBC is because, for the Olympics or whatever it might be, they're able to use Telemundo for Spanish language, and they're able to use another one of their channels for something else. And so that SAP or that alternative programming is not quite as important. But there is sometimes it's a decision for these networks. Like, do we go with Spanish or do we go with audio description on that second feed? And from a market standpoint, just to be blunt, Spanish often wins that decision-making process. And so ultimately moving forward, the new technology, and we're hopeful this is what will be done, we'll have more of these particular alternative programming options. Now, whether or not we will be able to only have audio description and not have the actual, let's say, broadcasters of an event, I don't know where that stands, because most of these stations are obviously going to probably want to have their people still being heard. So, but we'll keep working at that.
Okay. Next question.
Edward's iPad. Edward, go ahead.
Christy, go ahead.
Hi. So, Hi. Thank you very much for being here today. I have a question about, I know ACB board has a program where they have like a mentoring program to the affiliates, right, and chapters who choose it. And also I want to know a little bit about that and how California can access that help. And also I want to ask you about the assistance that ACB might be able to offer California with its suspension of its nonprofit.
So on the first one, so Cindy Hollis works on that program, the liaison program. Cindy works on that, and so the best way would be to for someone to reach out, Guillermo or whoever it might be, to reach out to Cindy, and it's C. Hollis, H-O-L-L-I-S, at acb.org. So the screen reader says Chollis, but it's
I just want you to know, Christy, that is being worked on. So
thank you so much.
Yeah, and so that program is great. And, depending on the board member and the relationship and all of that. So it's very helpful. On the 501c3 status, first of all, let me give a caveat, which I really want to put in here, is I do not have a lot of background knowledge about that situation. I've heard bits and pieces, one of them being that there was like a time frame, a waiting period that had to happen. I don't know if that's accurate. I don't know a lot of the information, so I feel like I'd be speaking out of school a little bit by getting too deep into it. But I would certainly say that Cindy, again, and Nancy Becker, are the two that if they can help, it's something they can help with, then I know they'd be more than happy to do that. Depending on exactly where the council is with that situation. I just don't know the detail.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Next hand.
Diane Harms. Go ahead, Diane.
Hello. Hi, Scott. What Roger was talking about would be kind of like if a sighted person, let's say you're watching a game and, the broadcast is just going on and on and on. And so if they muted the sighted person mutes the audio yeah. so that they can just watch the video. I don't know how you would do that, but that's kind of like what Roger's talking about. Yeah, I don't know how to that would
yeah.
work.
And some people, you know, some people do the whole, even, you know, if sighted people will do this. I know if they don't like the TV people, but they like their, you know, for example, their school or their team's radio announcers or whatever, right? They'll have the radio on and they'll have the TV on muted and they can, you know, and do it that way. But that's right. a totally different experience than what, you know, than really what we're talking about. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'll have to go to Carl Richardson or one of these other, you know, audio description pros on this and see sort of what would that be like. And the other problem or challenge, I'm going to call it a challenge, that we run into, of course, are delays. And
right.
so sometimes, right, you have something happen. Now, anyway, I won't go too deep into the scenario, but I truly don't know how it would be done. And,
yeah.
and with the live events, it's very challenging, right? With a movie or a TV show or a series or something, it's different because you have the finished product, you do the audio description when the dialogue's not happening. But with a live event, you're going to experience that sort of talking over interaction because the action is happening while people are talking. And so the audio description has to sort of talk at the same time. So I just don't know.
And then a lot of times too, with the sporting events, the you can sync up, you know, the radio with the TV so that they're,
yeah,
you know, so yeah.
One of the things we're working on, I mean, interrupt you, but one of the things we are looking at though, for example, with the NFL would be what the Washington Nationals and some other teams have done now, which is real time, which means different things to different people, I've realized, but no delay is what I'll call it. No delay broadcasting in the stadium itself. So, being able to have a headset or whatever it might be from a kiosk there, or some of them, I think you can even do it on your phone or whatever, but have that no delay so that you're listening to what's happening, what's being broadcast when it's happening, and you don't have a 7, 10, 15 or 20 second delay. So,
oh, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's nothing much worse than, you know, everybody else is cheering and you're just now hearing what happened.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever, and you can barely hear it because of the cheering, and it's frustrating. So,
all right. Well, thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Next hand. Oh, go ahead.
Guillermo has his hand up. Go ahead, Guillermo. You're unmuted.
Okay. Scott, I personally wanted to thank you for taking time out of your day to attend. And I thank you for giving me a call last week after a very tense call at work. That
was my
great.
Pleasure.
Yes.
It was my pleasure.
So, you know, the reality of things like homelessness and food insecurity is yep. something that's really big around the country. And in the state, we do have our housing committee that is, you know, trying to come up with solutions to help with this issue. I'm glad that we're doing a lot of this advocacy for all of the major stuff that we've been pushing. But I would really suggest that we take a look at the equitable housing across the country for us. You know, because it's a big can of worms as far as that goes. And I'm not even sure where to begin, but I know that a lot of the times I used to be big in sort of the housing sphere in yeah. here in LA, because I very intimately have known people in different yeah. Housing agencies. But I feel like with the times, things have changed, and with the regulations, I'm out of my league.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if maybe that's not something that we can focus on, because, you know, it's a necessary item that we need to really cover.
Let me ask you, if you don't mind, just to clarify this for me. Irma, are you talking about, for example, like people being denied housing because of being blind or with low vision, or something not being accessible around a property, or are you talking about like the number of individuals who are homeless who are blind or with low vision? Like, what is it? What
all of the above, really?
Okay,
You know, there's a lot of homeless blind there's sure. homeless blind individuals who may yeah. not have the resource and may not know yeah. what is what their rights are.
Yeah.
So I think we need to really focus on that type okay. of thing.
Well,
for us.
I think it's a good idea and something that I can talk to Claire about and others about it. It gets into an area that's very tricky for us, which and certainly not to say that it's not important or that it's whatever, but it is a bit of a tricky area because we look at our mission, which of course covers. I mean, you pretty much tell me any issue in society, and I can make it fit into our mission if I needed to, right? I mean that this reality. When we talk about independence, security, quality of life, equality of opportunity, right? All of those things could relate to housing. It could relate to food. It could relate to transportation. It relates to all these things. But how do, where do you start? I think making sure that when there is housing legislation or there's legislation related to something else that that we do our best to ensure that there's either, a reminder in that document, that legislation or something else that talks about the needs. I was actually listening to an article the other day, not to bore everyone, but I was listening to an article about the new homelessness or the new homeless, group of people are working individuals. So people who have full-time jobs and are homeless because of housing prices, the cost of housing has gone up so dramatically. It has outpaced wages. I believe they said 325% over the past three decades. And so, you're looking at people who are working jobs who are living in their cars and other things. It's such a big issue that maybe we can talk offline a little bit more about it and get with Claire and see what we might be able to brainstorm about that.
Definitely. I'm willing to do that.
Yeah.
It's been something that I've been sort of trying to figure out how to frame this issue in a way that would make sense to ACB.
Yeah.
And I think our housing committee has been trying to do similarly. So that I'm really glad that you're open to
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm absolutely happy to talk about it.
Great. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Well, Scott, we got you started early and we kept you late, so I appreciate that. But
no worries. It's been an honor.
It's I hope you're going to someplace fun. Thanks for
we're going to a play for one of our family members. She's a senior in high school. It's her last play here today and a matinee. So we're going to that in Raleigh and then driving up to Alexandria. So I'll be in the office this week and catching up on a bunch of stuff from last week. That's for sure. So thank you so much.
What's the play?
The play is a twist on Oliver Twist.
A twist on Oliver. Okay.
It's an Oliver Twist. Yes.
All right. Okay.
So looking forward to
enjoy it.
Being back with you guys.
Great. Enjoy it. And we will see you in Dallas, some of us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Looking forward to that, too. All right.
Definitely be there.
All right. Bye-bye.
Scott Thornhill, Executive Director of ACB. Okay, we're going to shift our focus from the national to the state in just a minute, but hey, let's do a door prize or two. I caught Lisa off guard. I'm sorry.
No. I'm here. I just couldn't get that mute button. Okay, so let's do... Oh, hold on a second here. My computer needs to wake up. All right, so $25 Amazon gift card from the San Francisco chapter. And the winner is Stephanie Jones. Congratulations, Stephanie.
All right. Do one more.
Oh, okay. We're going to do a $25 Target card from Contra Costa chapter. And And the winner's Roger Peterson. Congratulations, Roger.
All right. Fantastic. Okay, as I say, we're going to shift our focus now from national to state, and we are going to hear from our governmental affairs team. The co-chairs of the committee, Artis Bazin and Joshua Saunders, and also our director of governmental affairs, Regina Brink. And I mentioned Jeff Tom will be getting the action somewhere. I don't know who wants to start, but you guys take it away. Let's hear about what's happening in the state.
I will. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, first of all, to our wonderful co-chairs, Artis Bazin, and she's been doing this for a very long time and doing it well, and Joshua Saunders, and he has stepped up, and he and Artis are working together. It's the way I believe mentoring works. We put two people together that can gain it from each other's knowledge and experience. And that is exactly what happened with my assistant director of governmental affairs, Jeff Tom. He's stepping back, but he stayed on to assist me, and he's been great in both roles when he was director and now as assistant director. Thank you all. And of course, thank you to our committee, the people on the governmental affairs committee. We couldn't do it without you. And you'll be hearing from some of them who went to DC. But first, we're going to start with the state, and hopefully Jeff is on so he can take over in a little bit.
Regina, I don't mean to interrupt you, but Joshua is on the attendee side. Do you need him unmuted?
Yes. Joshua, okay. Artis, and Jeff.
Artis, you have on your side, and Jeff, you have on the panelist side. I'll unmute Joshua.
Okay, and we'll need some participants, but they can raise their hand when the time comes and just talk.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So AB 1902, as many of you know, has gone into effect as of January 1st, 2025, and that is the prescription labeling. And it covers Braille, large print, and it doesn't have to be ScriptTalk, but similar apps and things to ScriptTalk. They can have their own with their own independent device and all that without getting in the weeds. But that is, it covers all of it. And it covers about, it. We worked it together with a bill that covered 15 languages now available on the pharmaceutical website. And that's how we got that in, saying, you know, if you're going to offer it for a lot of languages, let's make Braille, large print, and accessible audio labeling part of that. And I want to extend an opportunity, any chapter that wants one of us to come and talk to you from governmental affairs, either of our chairs or Jeff or myself, to go to your chapter, whichever works scheduling wise, we will be glad to come. It may be virtually, but we would talk to you guys about this bill and how to implement it locally. Because as of now, we don't know if regulations have been written. We know they've been talking about it at the pharmacy level, but since it's in effect, we really need people to use it, request it, and it would be nice for everybody involved. So that's an opportunity that you can get in touch with me. I'm all over CCB, so you probably know how to reach me. And go ahead and let me or one of my team come to talk to you about it. SB 671 is another bill, and it's more of a not as exciting of a bill, but it's to finish getting Caltrans to put the audio pedestrian signals where they own the intersection, basically. And it's finishing a process that we started when we signed on to another bill, and that concerned leading pedestrian intervals. And I've been learning more than I ever did about the difference between those things. And what this would do is just put into law what's already in the code for Caltrans. Once a signal breaks or needs to be repaired, they need to replace it with an audio pedestrian signal. And we're asking them to do that with the latest technology that's touch-free. That means when you come up to the pole, it automatically starts without having to find the button. There's still a button if you want to use it. And it has vibro-tactile feedback so that if you need the vibration, instead of the speech that works as well. And it's not the cuckoo kind. It actually has speech that says walk and wait and so forth. So that is that bill, and it's being carried by Sabrina Cervantes, and I believe she's District 22. And coincidentally enough, in District 21, Diana Papan, P-A-P-A-N, is carrying AB 1250. And this came in pretty late in the process. Jeff and I thought it wasn't going to happen. But this is the eligibility for paratransit. And what that bill does is says that if you have a disability that isn't reasonably expected to change, then you should be able to certify once, especially since the process is so complicated and you have to go to a doctor and all that. And then once you're certified, you shouldn't have to keep recertifying. We estimate that about 20% of people have what's called a temporary disability or something that might improve. But there's not hard data, but it does suggest that about 80% of disabilities either don't improve or actually get added to as people age, of course, and some of us are experiencing that. So, for instance, I was totally blind for a long time due to retinoblastoma as a child, and somewhere recently, I don't know, so many years ago, I started to develop stenosis, and it's pretty painful and pretty, you know, I've got it under control, and I deal with it, and I can actually walk 2 miles now, but it takes work and it takes therapy and stuff. So you can get more disabilities as you go along. So that's our thing there. And that is, it's both of those bills have gone out of committee and they went on consent. And for those of you that know the process, that's really good news. And lastly, I want to deal with the NLS cuts. You'll hear more about this at the resolutions stage, but there are cuts slated on the state level. They're complicated to explain, but I'll just say that the Braille Institute stands to lose $500,000, and the Braille and Talking Book Library could be cut up to 90% on the budget that actually, and the complicated part is they'll be able to get books, but it's the part of their programs that would distribute the books out, or readers, like to be able to get a hold of the readers and offer those for free, or hotspots for free, or any of those specialized programs. Some of them have already been cut and they'll be cut further. And so we're going to deal with this in several ways. There was a recent development just this morning that a court case resulted in a freezing of like an injunction that freezes everything until the court can figure out what to do. And so we'll keep you abreast, but there will be a script coming out. We would like people to call their local representative, federal representatives, congressional representatives, and our two senators, and tell them to sign on to a letter that is going around. So watch your email. And pass it along to people that might be interested. The more phone calls, the better. And in this case, phone calls are the quickest because it's a quick turnaround. And so I'm going to encourage people to do that. And I hope I didn't go too quickly through that. We will be offering time for questions at the end of each of these little parts. But I want to give Joshua a chance to speak. Josh is going to talk about the SSI coalition and some of the things going on there. And Josh?
Hi, this is Josh. I wanted to start with a new bill since Regina just went through a bunch of them, AB 246. And what this bill does is it helps to protect people who are using SSI and SSDI from issues if they're financial resources are cut off due to government cuts. We've all been noticing the cuts that have been occurring in the federal government trying to slash different parts of different agencies and stuff. And what this bill states is that if they cannot do an eviction proceeding against you, if you actually don't have access to your SSI or your SSDI due to the fact that those payments have been suspended. And I wanted to let people know that this is a good thing that our state is doing. Currently, it passed through the Senate. That's the latest status on that. But it'd be nice to see this bill completed and passed on to the governor. In terms of the SSI coalition, which some of you may be aware of, they are still trying to work hard to make sure that SSI gets up to above the poverty level, and they're still working on that. And they also have a special circumstances program where they're trying to push forward, so that if there's a device, such as a refrigerator and other things that have to be replaced, there'll be some funding for that as well. And we'll know more once the May revise goes through. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh, for that. And Josh has been faithfully going to the coalition meetings and providing input. And it's important that we have a voice there. And he's been that voice. We have time now for questions. We can take three or four, depending on time. I'm going to ask people to limit your questions or comments to about 2 minutes, and the same for the answers. And either one of us can answer the question, depending on what it concerns. Okay, do we have any hands?
I'll remind folks also, you can email questions to ask@ccbnet.org. ask@ccbnet.org if you have a question you'd rather email in.
The host might be muted.
Go ahead, Patty.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, so sorry. Josh, I know that the SSI is a state program, but will there be any provision? Does anybody know on the federal level if we should have cuts in our Social Security, like senior disability, or
I may ask for some assistance from Regina for some of this, but I believe that the bill that's being passed through does not distinguish between whether the funding comes from the federal government or the state, because I know the people who get SSI or Social Security, it comes from both sources.
Oh, thank you.
Right. It's for people that get SSI/SSP, which if you're on regular Social Security, it doesn't address. There's other bills addressing that. But at the moment, it's for the lowest income, because that's the lowest income people that are currently living below the poverty line. So that's
okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Livy, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering about this letter that was mentioned. When approximately will this letter come out?
The script will come out later today, probably this either between now and the the last session of the banquet, or after the banquet, as soon as I can get it done. And it's a script. And what I'd like to have happen is people call on the phone, and this is just a guide, but say something like what is in the script. So it'll come out soon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have Edward. Go ahead.
Hi, this question is for Josh. You mentioned the SSI program, making sure that the SSI is above the poverty level. Is this for the state, or is this a federal process you're trying to get it above? Because I've had people, when I was a counselor, move out of state thinking that the SSI they have here in California would be the same in another state, and they found out it wasn't, and then they had a hard time getting back. So I was wondering, are you talking about the SSI poverty level for the national or for the state? Thank you.
Sure. The organization that I'm the coalition here is a coalition in California, and so what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the California legislature to supplement funding to get the amount raised above the poverty level in the state. It would be nice if there was a federal equivalent that was trying to push that, federally for the rest of the country, but this is where we are.
So if I could, Madam Chair,
go ahead,
add to that a little bit.
Yeah.
California has one of the highest SSI state levels in the country. Now, but that's in part due to the fact that our standard of our you know, cost of living is so high. So, you know, most states have give less in benefits than California does. But the good thing so far, I haven't seen anything that indicates that the federal portion of the SSI grant, which every state uses, including our own, is going to be decreased. I mean, it's always possible, but I haven't seen that yet.
Don't give them any ideas. Okay. Do we have another hand?
Yes, we do. Lori Kastner, go ahead, Lori.
Hi, am I unmuted now?
Yes.
My question is regarding this museum and library funding bill that I think an email was sent this morning about it again. And the federal funding for museums and libraries have been cut, but my understanding was that the Library of Congress, which I guess would include all of our libraries for the blind, is not affected by that. Is that correct?
No, it's not, because there are portions. And so the actual books and the actual production of books is not affected, but will be affected both at the Braille Institute and the Braille and Talking Book Library is the means to distribute those books out, such as staff, such as mailing and getting everything. You know, it's free matter, but it's not all the way free to get it in the mail, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of the things to distribute the books and to provide devices to read on, like your machines, not the machines themselves, but to get them to you. So if there's no way to distribute books to people and to buy new cartridges and all that kind of things, then it doesn't matter whether we have all the books. So that's the rub. And when they put out the press releases and the talking points, they try to concentrate on they're not cutting our books. That's true. But they might just sit in the warehouse unless you can download them.
Bard won't be impacted by that.
Correct. Because it's a pretty, you know, it'll be up there and you can download. You can do download to your Victor stream, all that stuff. But the majority of people, and this is from Mike Marlin, I don't know what the Braille Institute's figures are, but up here in Northern California, he told us that 80% or so, right, Jeff, actually still use the cartridges because people are newly blind. They're in nursing homes. They're just losing their sight. A lot of people are 55 and older and don't even touch a computer. My mother never touched a computer till the day she passed.
Thank you. I understand. I appreciate your answer.
Okay. Do we have a question by email, Steve?
Rob is checking that. So,
in the meantime, you have one more hand.
Let's hold on and see if we have anything by email. Thank you.
Sure.
No email so far.
Okay. Let's take that hand and that'll be the last one.
Okay. Shauna, go ahead, Shauna.
Shana?
Hi, my question is about, so I understand that the state librarian is the one who instituted these cuts, both to the Braille Institute Library and the Braille Talking Book Library. Is he above Mike Marlin? How does that work? Is he...
I'm not 100% sure this is accurate because it's very confusing. But what I think is happening is that the state is going to cut the grant that it gives to Braille Institute. But the reason I believe they're cutting that grant is that the federal money through the Institute for Museum and Library Services is going to be cut. And so and that money goes directly to the state. If the state bore the entire cut in that funding source, then it would be, then the Braille and talking, then the Braille Institute library wouldn't undergo any cuts, and the state would take a huge cut. So this way, the cut is actually going to be split over both libraries. Now, that doesn't do either library any good, but I think that's probably what is happening. The Braille Institute says it doesn't get any federal funds, but in a way, in a sense, it's allowed to get the funding it does because of the federal money that comes through the Institute for Museum and Library Services. That's my best understanding of this anyway.
And thank you. We're still researching, and we'll keep you updated if we get corrections or more current information. Sorry, that's my Braille sense deciding to turn off and turn back on. So I would like to move on now and let Jeff take over, because we want to talk about the DC Leadership Conference and our federal efforts on behalf of our state, just to confuse you guys more.
Okay, so I am going to, what we want to do is hear from those who went to the DC Leadership Conference. Not going to necessarily spend a ton of time on the specific legislative imperatives as much as we do want to hear from those who went there. And so first, if, and I think they're all on the...
you have Linda, who has her hand raised already.
So yes, can we recognize Linda first? Linda McLeod.
We were going to go with artists first, Jeff.
Oh, okay. I am sorry about that. Artists, you speak first, and then Linda will be recognized after artists finishes.
Okay. Well, I understood that I was supposed to briefly delve over.
You were. I had forgotten. Entirely my fault.
No problem. No problem. First of all, I want to remind everyone that federal advocacy, state advocacy, whatever, it's not a one-time thing. So you can't just make one call and think it's taken care of, because it's ongoing. And CCB this year, we took a targeted approach to national legislation, because we felt that there aren't very many people in California Council of the Blind that could afford to go to the DC leadership and the legislative conference. So we decided that we were going to ask CCB members to participate in advocacy either in their local district offices or come to national and talk to the DC legislators in DC. And that way we got far more participation in the whole process. We also asked CCB members, as we have in the past, to give their name onto letters. So for those of us going to DC, we'd have a better opportunity to see the legislators in districts that we were not constituents in. So ACB did have three imperatives, which we all obviously took to the various offices. And all of those, of course, are very important. You know, the medical device accessibility, the website and application accessibility, and the communication and video and technology accessibility, which first passed in 2010, but now it's up for reauthorization again, because there's been so many technology changes in the few years since then. And we advocated about those, but there also are a lot of other national issues that individual members talked about. For example, we're all concerned about the Department of Education going away as a department and what will happen to the programs under that, because there's a lot of special education programs that are under that. Randall Shepherd is under that, and we're not sure what's going to happen to those programs. So we were advocating on that. Also, there's a few other bills that have come up recently. There is an SSI one in relation to the amount of assets you can have.
and there's a bill that's been brought forward to increase those. Right now, people can only have, as individuals, $2,000 of assets, and as a married couple, $3,000. They're asking this to be increased to $10,000 for individuals and $20,000 for married couples. So that's one of the new bills that's being introduced. There's obviously some things that they're talking about cutting different programs, disability and aging programs. And one of the ones they're looking at cutting is the protection and advocacy, where, you know, people get help if they can't get the programs they're supposed to get. There's consults on developmental disabilities, and there's long-term care. There's proposing cuts to all of those. There's the bill about Safeguard American Voting Eligibility Act, and called the SAVE Act. Now, this isn't just for blind people. This is for people across the board, but it would affect our community a lot because they want people to bring in their birth certificate or a passport to register to vote. And many people with disabilities do not have immediate access to both, and it would take some doing for people to get a hold of this kind of paperwork. Another one that's come up is the Connect for Health Act, which would help people to connect online for medical visits more easily. There's an early detection of vision impairment for children act. There's reauthorization of the Older Americans Act, which has to be reauthorized this year, and that's waiting to be introduced. And I'm sure some of you have heard about that before, and that's very important because a lot of people in the blindness community are in the Older American group. Raise the Wage Act is waiting to be introduced. There's Cogswell's Macy Act is waiting to be introduced. So as you see, there's lots and lots of them. One of the big changes they're making in Social Security Administration and the IRS is that they want to make it impossible to get paper checks any longer. So if you currently now get your Social Security in a paper check, that program is going to be discontinued by September. So each person has to contact their local office and make sure they get the information so that it can be put immediately either on a debit card or in your bank account. And this is going to take some time because they've cut staff in Social Security offices by about half. And so you'll have to be able to either access your account online. You can do it online if you have a My Social Security account, and you can sign up for one of those online. And as long as you could provide information so that they know who you are, you can do it all online, or you'll have to call your local security office and perhaps go in person, depending on where you live, to be able to make sure that you get that changed so that you get your checks right into your bank account.
And try to make an appointment, because if you don't, they might turn you away.
That's right. You don't want to just walk in the office, because with less offices now, you might be waiting all day. And so it's much better if you can ask for an appointment in advance. Thanks, Regina.
Yeah.
It's already been touched on that there's been some efforts. Florida, Tennessee, and a couple of other states about getting rid of the Rendell-Shepard Act. Now, they're not sure what's going to happen when the Department of Education, if they vote to close that, because then if
it remains, it would have to go under a different department, such as the Department of Labor. Of course, you've heard some about the HHS cuts, Health and Human Resources, which affects housing and a bunch of other programs, which would relate to anyone that's waiting for housing. And they're really talking about substantial cuts there. I've heard up to 50%. There's also, in the current budget, there's a lot of cuts to Medicaid and SNAP programs. And one of the things I just read about, I don't know if it was last night or this morning, they're adding a provision there with new work requirements. Well, as you know, many people with disabilities are not able to work because they have conditions that make it very difficult for them to work. So this could really affect some blind people, especially those who have more than one condition.
Or can't find work. Sometimes it's harder.
Right, right. Well, transportation is a big issue. And of course, in federal jobs specifically, they're really pushing people to go back in person. So it's going to really affect a lot of people. Okay, so that's my legislation kind of update. And at the end, we're going to, of course, take questions. So,
all right. Thank you, Artis, for that very informative report.
And I'm sorry, Jeff, my Braille display jumped and I called on you too soon. But now, go ahead.
Okay. So now we want to hear first from Linda, and then let's go to Ed and Christy after that. So you guys be prepared.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
We can. Yes. Thank you.
All right. Hello, this is Linda McLeod. I am a retired attorney, and I went to the leadership conference this year. It was my first year doing it. I actually was prompted by my daughter, who is a an attorney who works for DREDF, which is a nonprofit and that has headquarters in Berkeley that works on disability issues, to use my abilities, as well as the fact that I do have some means, to go to Washington, D.C. and advocate for disabled people. So it was my first trip. I met Ed and Christy and Jeff, who were fantastic. It was wonderful to learn from them, also to learn from the leadership conference. I would encourage any person who can afford to fly to DC and spend a few days there to do this. It's a wonderful learning opportunity to give you all the information you need to be able to be armed with the facts and details. And you're given pretty good free rein to take the approach that you feel comfortable with. I spoke with a staff member of my representative, Sam Licardo, and based on my research of Sam, who is a brand new, just voted in representative of my district, I focused on the medical device initiative because it had the most bipartisan support last year. And he had mentioned several times in town halls how important bipartisanship was and that he was trying to create relationships. And so his staff member was extremely interested. I brought my volunteer in with me to the meeting to get her perception on how things went. And she thought things went very, very well. And so did I. He was the only person I actually got to meet of the people in my area. I did drop off materials at the other areas. We had a Zoom call follow-up with Zoe Lofgren, which is a district right next to me. She actually attended the Zoom call, and Christy and Ed and Jeff also joined. And I was never able to connect with another representative, Kevin Mullen. but did drop off materials and made sure that the receptionist knew after 5 minutes exactly what was in my packet. So overall, I just want to basically talk about the experience that I had. It was my first experience. I would definitely go next year, and I would encourage other people to go as well.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. Ed or Christy, which one of you wants to?
I'm going to go first.
Okay.
This is Ed. If anybody went to the Sacramento Legislative Days, fantastic. But I'll tell you, going to Washington, D.C. is like 10 times bigger than Sacramento offices. It's a city down there. And we were met by Claire, who was wonderful, as well as Kobe. And it was a fantastic experience. We had a person by the name of Daniela, who was from Columbia, a student in the area. And she was just super, super nice. And I'm going to tell you, even the staff, when we asked about rooms, a lot of them didn't know the exact rooms. That's how big it was. But anyhow, we met quite a few people. We were there the whole day, and we did not have a time to basically just take a break because we were going from office to office, either dropping something off or talking to the legislatures. But the two people that struck me was Mark Takano. And he was our son's high school teacher. He kind of reminded us. But anyhow, the thing is that when we left the office, we went down to ask about going to Adam Schiff's office, which is in the other building. And the person at the registration desk said, you know, go back to your senator and you could take the tram
assembly
from one end to the other. And so we went back and the Mark's assembly assistant helped us, and we did take the tram. It was really fantastic. It's not open to the public. You have to have an aide or a representative be with you. When we finished meeting, just dropping off things with Adam Schiff, we walked back to the tram, and they stopped us immediately and said, who are you? What are you doing? We said, well, we came here by tram. They said, good luck. You're not going to get on without a representative. So we had to go outside. But that was great. The other person that we talked to was Ken Calvert. Now, the Democrats were very open, our initiatives and were very receptive. The Republicans weren't. And so we talked to Ken Calvert's assistant or aide, and he took us into a nice big long room, which was nice. But I could sense that he was like, okay, let's hurry up and get this over with. And he just was looking at papers and not really paying attention to us. We did talk about the description, audio description. And what caught him was when I brought up having him go to the movie theater and do the audio description activity. And he was really, really interested in that. And actually, he put the paperwork down and started interacting with us. And then he kind of clicked in and says, oh yeah, maybe that is kind of a good initiative for us to look at. Anyhow, those are my experiences. I want to thank the team that put this together. It was a great experience. And if you can go, do it. Go ahead, Christy.
Hi. So my experience, it was very wonderful. I enjoyed the workshops that we had in the seminar. And we had a very good preparation day on Monday for the legislative seminar. And what I was happy with is the first person we met with, we talked to Jimmy Gomez, who went to high school with our son. So our son had his name was dropped throughout the day. I knew Jimmy. I didn't know him, but in a union convention, he came up to me and introduced himself and said that he went to school with our son. And of course our son, you know, said, yeah, he did. We went to school together. So he was, his legislative aide was very up on all of our legislation plus more. So that was very exciting. we met with Pete Aguilar's assistant, and he's our congressperson. I'm sorry, I said assembly, but it's Congress. We met with that aide, and that was very good. Yeah, we were walked our shoes off, and when we dropped off all of the other paperwork, we went to, I can't remember whose office it was, but that person said that they were the disability coordinator. So we actually got to drop off paperwork to that person. So again, this was so exciting. My adrenaline was so high at the end of the day, because it was just so thrilling to be able to do something like this, to do it as a team, not to have to depend on, oh my gosh, I don't know where I'm going. But to have the assistance of Daniela, who was a very vibrant Colombian student. So again, I can't say enough that experience this once and you'll be hooked. Thank you.
One more thing is that it's really important not to be afraid of talking to your legislator or the aides. The important thing is to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
And as a vocational rehab counselor for 32 years, I brought up several of my clients and their struggles. And that's how they connect, when you have stories to tell. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, too. And it was great working with all three of you.
Yeah, and thank you, Ed, because that's true. Whether you go to your state, local, city council, wherever you go to advocate. Thank you.
So, Does Kevin want to chime in here? I'm sure Kevin has a different perspective than any of us.
Well,
I don't know whether he wants to share it or not.
Well, I can sure try.
Right.
This is the third time I've been, second since I retired. And I would say it took me one or two to kind of settle in. And I was a history major, so I loved walking around the Capitol. And talking to our congressman, our local congressman is the other party, not the one I am. So I enjoyed engaging with his very nice and very smart aide. I just thought he was misled on a few topics, but I would recommend this to anyone to do. I don't know how much I would have got involved. I guess marrying artists brought that into, and I don't know what I've listened to everybody talk. I can't really add much except to come in and state your positions, talk to them and just keep advocating. Sorry, that's a little disjointed, but short note.
No, it's perfect.
Thank you.
Did Artis have anything you wanted to
add? Yeah, no, I'm just about to recognize her. Go ahead, Artis.
I really agree with Ed when he said that it's important to tell your story, because I noticed I've been going for many years, ever since 89 was the first time I went. And each year when I talk to staff members, they really perk up when you tell your story. And that's when they'll ask questions. I've also noticed that if you use a device to like read your Braille, like I always bring my Braille Sense with me, and if I'm reading my notes or whatever, oftentimes they'll ask, what is that device? And that kind of perks them up a little bit too. So they're really interested in hearing how it affects you and others that you meet on a daily basis. So that's the important thing I really want to stress to everyone. But I agree, go if you've never been before, and there's plenty of us that are willing to assist you in knowing what you need to know, helping you to write letters, helping you to we even do a session before each year's legislative seminar where we give people a role and act it out so that they feel more comfortable when they do go to DC. So never feel like you're alone. And as Christy and Ed did, they asked for a volunteer to take them around. And ACB is really good at finding a few of those.
Okay, thank you, Artis. So I know we're running short on time, so I'll just make a couple comments. First, it was great working with the team this year, as it is every year, and I especially like it when we have new members come for their first time, new or old members. Just a couple things I noted. First, on an unfortunate side, we had an appointment set with Senator Padilla's aides, but then it turned out they weren't going to be in D.C. that day. So we're still trying to get that appointment firmed up, but it will happen. I think we haven't had as much success with shifts people for whatever reason. And that's sort of disconcerting because usually, you know, talking to artists and others, Schiff has been someone who's been very supportive and reasonably accessible. So I wanted to make one comment about one of the, and I actually put this out on the list for those who happen to read it. I had an appointment with one of the three Republicans that is being targeted because they're in swing districts. And this particular one is David Valadao, who's in Bakersfield. And they have the highest rate of percentage-wise Medi-Cal recipients in the state. They are scared. There is no question that the 2026 elections are squarely on their mind. They are putting some pressure on the leadership when it comes to reducing Medicaid cuts, but they're between the veritable rock and a hard place because they don't want to, you know, anger their president, but they also don't want to anger their constituents. So the more pressure that, in my mind, the more pressure that gets placed against these folks in swing districts, Ken Calvert, Young Kim in Orange County, and David Valadao, the more they are likely to obey the first law of politics that I ever learned, and that is win the next election. It's self-preservation. And so there are possibilities out there of changing Republican votes over the next 2 years, but there's going to have to be pressure on them to vote with their constituents as opposed to the leadership that they are, you know, also sworn to follow. So I want to make that comment, and I want to thank everyone for listening, and Regina for the great job that she did. And that's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you. So if you are in Ken Calvert, Young Kim, and Valadao, David Valadao's district, please, and I've been told that's how he says Valadao. Okay. Definitely know how to say your legislator's name. And if it's a complicated one, try to find out before you go how to actually pronounce the name.
I'm glad he's not my legislator then.
Yeah. but we had some letters distributed you could use about the massive cuts that they're still pushing on the CalFresh or SNAP for the federal level and Medicaid or Medi-Cal for us. So we will, I can send that back out to you or any one of us can. And if you need help modifying that to make it more current, that's fine. But you can use the same templates and just update, you know, what you're trying to say. Like, I'm writing to you again about this because it's still happening. Something like that.
Can I make a comment? This is Linda. Regarding the library funding and the state proposing to zero out the Braille and Talking Book Library $500,000 funding, I have called the governor's office and I've actual real person does answer. And I encouraged all the people in my family to also call, and they were also able to get through. And I just basically said, I don't understand why this is being cut. I'm blind. I need these services. They're very important to me. It doesn't have to be complicated. You really don't need too much of a script. They were very receptive and said they would forward on the message to the governor. So it was very easy to do. I'm sure Regina, I'm sure the phone numbers of the governors can be distributed, but It's not super complicated. And I would call several times a week if you can.
Yeah, and the script that I send out is just a guide. Make it your own, make it personal. But some people would like to kind of see what they'd like to say. But you're right, you don't need it. And phone numbers will be provided when this goes out.
Regina, do you want to take any hands from the audience?
Yes, please. But first, do we have any email questions, Rob? You might be muted, Rob. Okay, let's take a hand, or maybe Rob can
okay.
email and tell
Sheila,
us.
Sheila, go ahead.
Hey there. I'm concerned about, oh, now it just went out of my head, aging and disability resource connections, or ADRCs, which are connected to the Administration for Community Living, which is being gutted. These ACL programs are often serviced by independent living centers, some of which have, and one of ours in Alameda County has, some blindness services that they have attached to them. So I would also like to put that on your scope. And in addition, I sent out a Medi-Cal story. There are at least three places that are asking for Medi-Cal stories, and I wrote one. And mine was more unusual in that everybody else was saying, you know, oh, we need our IHSS, we need that, we need this. And I did say that too. But what I said is, I'm working and I'm able to work because I have Medi-Cal that helps take care of some stuff so I don't have to stress over every little thing. But I also brought up the fact that some stuff in Medi-Cal needs to be improved. And I just want to point out, for anyone who has any doubt at all, the SSI portal is a piece of and it is very badly inaccessible for use with screen readers. And that is well known. Yes, and so I would like to see some pretty serious hard kicks in the cojones to some higher ups in the administration of the Social Security, because I'm still supposed to report every month, even though I'm not receiving any funding.
Right.
And to prove that I should be on the 250 working disabled program. And I need a whip, and I'm working on it. That's a work incentives planner. I don't mean a whip. I mean a whip.
I'm sorry, Lisa. Are you meaning on the federal or on the state level for SSI?
Well, I was SSI and SSDI. I receive neither now, but I am on the 250 working disabled program, which is part of Medi-Cal.
Let's talk offline about this if it's
well, just really quick.
Sorry. I really would love to get into this, but we want to give everyone a chance, and we're doing like a 2-minute sort of.
All I was going to say is it's state and federal, and it's complicated.
I knew that. That's why I was like, ooh, this could take a long time.
Yeah, let's talk offline.
Okay, so I do want to tell you, Sheila, that this is exactly the kind of thing that SSI Coalition is working on. We have members like the Justice in Aging and other groups, and it's the funding you were addressing was exactly some of the funding that artists talked about. All of this is on our radar, and that's why I'm trying to tell people it's a lot, and so a lot of it overlaps. And so that's why I divided the report up too, because it's a lot to handle. Do we have another raised hand? Can we take maybe one more?
We do not right now.
Okay. Did Rob get?
No emails so far.
Well,
because you're not.
Wow. I guess we can end here. And I can tell you that we will definitely be sending things out. You might get things from artists occasionally, or Josh, or Jeff, or myself. All of us are a team that are working together to address as many things as possible. What I would also say, as a matter of it, these things can be scary. Number one, you're not alone. There's a lot of people facing the same sort of uncertainty that you are. Secondly, you're not without some kind of recourse. And that's what we're here for, to tell you how to contact your representative, to give you resources. And I will tell you, all of the four of us are committed that if we don't know the answer, we'll try to find it out or steer you to someone who can help you. We don't want anyone in this organization or outside of it who is blind or low vision to feel like they're out there all alone with no one and nothing. And that, if we can do anything more as governmental affairs, it's not because we just like to read legislation or we're wonky or we like political science. That's part of it. But for me, and I think for each one of us, it's our commitment to making your lives better in any way that we possibly can through our advocacy. All right. Thank you.
Regina, thank you so much. A lot of good information there. Jeff, Artis, Josh, everybody, and enjoyed hearing the reports of the DC. That's I didn't go this year, but I have gone in the past, and it's an incredible experience. So thank you all. Okay, we're going to shift over to away from government specifically and on to money matters. But first of all, Larry, can we do one more of the chapter of the year entries to find out what our chapters are doing? And keep in mind, we're going to be hearing these throughout the weekend. And then tonight at the banquet, you'll have a chance to vote the people's choice of who will be the chapter of the year. Let's hear one more. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. I cued it. Hang on.
These are the testimonies from the California Council of the Blind High Desert Chapter. Robert Acosta said, "Our chapter is composed of one major bond, and that is love. The problem of one individual becomes our problem to help them, and we do so. If the person is in trouble, we are there to help them." Al Jean Manning said, "We have a very thoughtful president. We do Sailing for the Blind events once a year, and she makes it very accessible and fun for everyone to attend." Nancy Unger said, "Members helped out when my friend passed away. They brought food to my house and socialized with me. It was very nice, a very friendly chapter where we all feel welcome." Lois Tarr said, "Blind people usually want to stay at home where everything is familiar, and it's wonderful that this chapter gives us the ability to get out and mingle with people." Bill Ulmer said, "The chapter includes people from down the hill that find it hard to get transportation. And our club tries to include as many people in the events we hold. We have barbecues and great fellowship with wonderful chapter meetings that are easily accessible through conference calls, with jokes and prayers and a wonderful raffle. Overall, it is one of the best chapters in California Council of the Blind." Jordan Miranda said, "We're so thankful that the Inland Empire chapter was able to merge with the High Desert chapter. All the people are very nice. It is a great chapter." And Adel Galaviz said, "I feel welcomed and warm, as well as the discussions are very informative and entertaining. I love the camaraderie that all members share."
All righty. Thank you very much. Moving on, as I say, I first heard about Chris Peterson's Penny Forward program a few years ago, and my first impression was kind of like, well, another money guy. What's, you know, what the blind people do the same thing. But then we had him come and talk to our Greater Los Angeles chapter. It's been 2 years ago, maybe three. I can't remember. But and it was one of the best discussions we've ever had at a chapter meeting, in that folks were, you know, finding out the specific needs that us blind folks have when it comes to money management, all the issues around receiving benefits and trying to save money and you know, dealing with the extra expenses that we have as blind folks. And I really was thrilled when I reached out to Chris. He said he'd be willing to come talk to our chapter, because I wanted to share what he shared with our Greater LA chapter a couple of years ago. So gosh, he's got podcasts, he's got, you know, training available, and I'll just let him tell the story. Chris, thank you, and welcome to the California Council of the Blind.
Thank you, Steve. Are you hearing me okay?
We are.
All right. Gosh, that was a really nice introduction, and it's a really high bar that I will try to exceed this time. Thank you all for being here, for having me. I am Chris Peterson. I'm the founder and CEO of Penny Forward. Penny Forward offers, as Steve mentioned, self-paced online financial education courses that are designed to be screen reader and braille display accessible. We also produce weekly Wednesday workshops on personal finance related topics. We have interactive discussions there. On the third Wednesday of every month, those are open to the ACB community events platform and to the essentially the general public, so that you can get a sense for what those are all about. Every other Wednesday of the month, they are open to paying members of Penny Forward. Memberships cost $99 a year or $9.99 a month. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. We also offer one-on-one financial counseling where we can help you with your individual personal finance questions, personal finance needs. We are not investment advisors. So if your questions are investment related, we do offer referral services. If possible, we refer people to one of our board members who is a certified financial planner and is happy to have a quick consult with somebody or engage in a deeper relationship if that's something that you want. And I heard somebody mention a work incentive practitioner earlier. We recently brought onto our staff a certified work incentive practitioner. Her name is Jenny Holcomb, and she is blind, and she is available for consultation or assistance with work incentives related to Social Security, as well as medical assistance and other things. So I know that she really appreciates hearing from people when they reach out to her. I want to talk today, and then I want to leave some time for questions, because there are always questions about things that I don't even think to mention. I want to talk today about six things that I think are really important when it comes to being a wise and thoughtful and capable manager of our money. Something that's important no matter what our income is, no matter what our means is. The first thing is being aware of where your money is being spent. This may seem obvious to some of you, and it may not seem obvious to others. I have spoken with clients who are unsure of how much their electric bill or their gas bill costs. They don't know about how much they spend on groceries in a week or in a month. It's really important to know that stuff. And it's really important to write that stuff down in a format that's accessible to you so that you have an awareness of where your money is being spent and how much money you might have left over at the end of a pay period, whether that's every 2 weeks if you're getting a paycheck that way, or twice a month as some employers do, or once a month if you're receiving benefits. The next step, after you really have a good awareness of where your money is being spent, is to start to be planful about where that money gets spent. If you're unsatisfied with how high your electric bill is, then try to take some steps to reduce your electric bill. Turn things off when you're not using them. Use your air conditioner less, especially at night when it's cooler anyway. It used to be that keeping lights off in rooms that you're not in, something that's not always important for us blind people, used to be a big recommendation. Now, with the switch from incandescent bulbs to compact fluorescents or even LED bulbs, lighting is not such a big deal as it used to be when it comes to electricity. Same thing with groceries. If you're unhappy with how much you're spending on your grocery bill, look at ways that you might be able to trim that grocery bill some. Are there foods that maybe aren't very good for you that maybe you want to experiment with cutting out entirely, or maybe just reducing how much you eat them. Beverages can be a big weight on our grocery bills. I personally have, for the most part, stopped buying soda or pop, depending on whatever you prefer to call it, because I spent so much money on it, and it wasn't very good for me. What happened when I did that? Well, I lost about 20 pounds, and I started drinking a lot more water and a lot more fruit juice and other things that were a lot healthier for me. Eating healthier foods, though sometimes healthier foods are more expensive, can be a way to save money in your grocery bills, because when you eat healthier foods, you don't get hungry as often. You have more energy to make it through the day. And so you may not even feel like you need to spend as much when you develop that habit. Fun fact, Ozempic and similar medications that have been brought on the market in the last few years and are primarily targeted at people who are diabetic and want to lower their A1C, or maybe people who just want to lose weight, have an interesting side effect in that less healthy foods become less appetizing for a lot of people who take these medications, and they find that that they do find that healthier foods are much more appetizing, much more satisfying to them. And one article I read said, he said he buys an expensive steak like once a month, but he's not eating very much of the unhealthy sort of filler foods that he was eating throughout the rest of the month. And so he now finds himself in the position to be able to afford that expensive steak rather than some of those filler junk food kinds of things that that he was eating before. So being planful about where your money is going to be spent and how much you're going to spend is the second step. Some people know that as creating a budget. The third step is to try to minimize your use of credit. If you're in debt already, this can take some work. It can take a great deal of work in some cases to try and get out of debt. If debt is not something that you are used to using anyway, then you maybe are a step ahead here. If you are a younger person who is starting to think about credit cards and your credit score and building credit and so forth, here are some tips for you that can help you to do that without getting yourself deep into the kinds of trouble with debt that some people find themselves in. First thing is, if you do use credit, if you borrow money, pay it back as quickly as you possibly can. It's a very good habit to be in to, if you're putting money, if you're spending with a credit card, to be very careful about how much you spend and make sure that you can pay off your entire credit card bill, not just the minimum balance, every month when your statement comes out. You will also save money by doing that, because the more money that you let ride on a credit card, the more interest you pay. And that interest can end up costing us a lot of money, as well as making it more difficult for us to get out of debt. The same thing is true for other types of credit. Loans such as student loans, personal loans, home equity loans, even mortgages. These days can often be paid off early without any penalties. And so if you have the ability to do that, to make extra payments to get those debts paid off quicker, by all means do so. It'll free up cash that you'll be able to use for other more satisfying things once you've done that. This isn't something that only comes from me, by the way. There are other financial influencers, Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, and others who promote this philosophy of minimizing the use of debt. And in the case of Dave Ramsey, he really advocates for people being entirely debt-free. My personal opinion on this is that debt is something that should be used as a last resort, and it should be used very carefully to make your life better. For example, if you've got a really, really great business idea, you've thought it through and you really understand well how that business is going to make money, then it may be a good idea for you to take out a small business loan to start up that business. However, if we're just talking about, you know, buying some new clothes, buying a new TV, even something a little bit more expensive like buying a car or buying a home, maybe you want to put those things off a little bit longer if you can pay cash for them. Another thing that people find to be challenging when they get into debt is a cycle where they get into debt and they work really hard to get out of debt, only to find themselves landing back in debt again because something happened that was unexpected that they had to borrow money to pay for. Many times these are emergencies, but it's not always that the case. Sometimes they are opportunities that come up that you just can't pass up. So in the process of getting out of debt, many influencers recommend establishing a life happens fund or an emergency fund. This can be as little as $500 to start with. You can work your way up then to $1,000. Maybe after that, you work your way up to 1 month's worth of your whatever your income is. After that, maybe see if you can work your way up even further to 2 months' worth of income, and then 3, 4, 5, and 6. This is not a quick and easy process. It can be a slow process, and it also can have setbacks. But what you'll find when you start to develop this life happens fund is that you won't find yourself as often in a position to need to borrow money in order to pay for those instances where life happens. And so you will find it to be easier and easier and easier to get out of debt and to stay out of debt. When do you know that you're done? Well, many influencers and financial experts recommend that you put aside about 3 to 6 months worth of your monthly expenses for an emergency. That is your monthly expenses, not your monthly income. And if you're setting aside money to add to your life happens fund, you can subtract whatever you're setting aside from your monthly income to get your monthly expenses. You know when you're done, when you feel safe, when you feel secure. For me, that ends up being about 6 months worth of expenses. For some people who maybe were, up until a couple of months ago, were in fairly secure positions, maybe with a federal government job or a state government job, maybe they felt like 3 months would be okay for them. People who have less stable income, they live on commissions, they have their own business, and sometimes business is booming and sometimes it's not, may want to set aside a year. So it's a very personal choice. But setting that aside in a cash equivalent, something like a high yield savings account, maybe a money market account, or something similar, is a good way to get yourself that kind of security that many of us are looking for. When you've gotten to the point where you're able to cover those life happens kind of situations, at that point, it might be worth thinking about investing. And investing is something that some people are really excited by. They see it as a way to get rich. They maybe even see it as a way to get rich quickly. There are other people that are frightened of investing. They see it as gambling. They see it as being something that's really complicated, something they don't know enough about, and so they don't invest at all. There are many people that do invest but prefer to enlist the help of an investment advisor in order to manage their investments and help them decide where to put their money. And then there are many people who really, really enjoy the world of investing, really enjoy following the news, looking at the charts, reading all the numbers, keeping very detailed records, and they really want to do it themselves. And there are some people that migrate from one camp to the other, and they maybe will migrate back over time. Investing can be done whether you are receiving Social Security benefits or medical assistance, as well as if you happen to be somebody that is, you know, has some more means and has, you know, income from pension, Social Security retirements, income from a job, etc. One of the simplest and easiest ways to invest and a great opportunity for our community as well as the disability community as a whole is ABLE accounts. ABLE accounts started to become a thing back in about 2016 after the passage of the Achieving a Better Life Experience or ABLE Act in 2015. An ABLE account, for those of you who are somewhat experienced with investing and with these types of investment accounts, an ABLE account functions a lot like a 529 educational savings account with some key differences. One of those key differences is that in order to be eligible to open an ABLE account, you need to have a disability. And that disability needs to have occurred relatively early in your life. Up until January of 2026, that disability needs to have occurred before you turned 26. After January, that limit will increase to age 46. Thanks to some legislation, some legislation that was passed a few years ago. An ABLE account allows you to set aside up to $100,000 without impacting your ability to receive means-tested benefits. What does that mean? Well, means-tested benefits are benefits that you receive if you have limited resources and a very low income. Examples of this are SSI, Medi-Cal, or Medicaid in, you know, generically around the United States, SNAP benefits, WIC benefits, other types of assistance. All of these can be protected if you set aside money in an ABLE account. Now, when you've got money in your ABLE account, you can choose to invest that money. Most ABLE accounts offer a predefined set of investment choices ranging from very conservative to very aggressive. These investment choices don't allow you typically to invest in individual stocks and bonds. What they do allow you to invest in are mutual funds or exchange traded funds. If you don't know what that means, I'll cover that in a moment. You don't need to invest all of your money in your ABLE account in the stock market or in the securities market, the stock and bond market. You can choose to put some of your money into an interest-bearing savings account and put another percentage of your money into investment accounts. So an ABLE account can be a place to keep your emergency fund or your life happens fund, as well as to start to invest to grow wealth for your future. You can spend money from your ABLE account on qualified disability expenses. It sounds restrictive, and it's really not. Qualified disability expenses fall into a number of broad categories as defined by the ABLE Act. including housing, food and personal care, transportation, education, employment-related expenses, legal expenses, health care, end-of-life-related expenses, and there may be others that I'm missing right at the moment. In any case, in practice, ABLE administrators and the ABLE National Resource Center have done a lot of study on this and provide this kind of guidance. If you're spending out of your ABLE account and that spending is used to benefit yourself, then you probably can justify that expense as falling into one of the qualified disability expense categories. And there is not a lot of oversight of this. So, you know, if you're wrong, to my knowledge, nobody has gotten in any kind of trouble for this. What they recommend not doing, however, is spending money out of your ABLE account on other people. Don't buy somebody a birthday present out of your ABLE account. Don't buy a car for your brother who lives in England and is never going to drive you around in that car. Do buy a car for your spouse who drives you around in that car every day, though, because it benefits you. ABLE accounts are fairly easy to open. The typical process involves providing similar information to the information you would provide when opening a checking account or another type of investment account. You might need your name, address, social security number, some proof of identification, such as your state ID, your driver's license number, a passport number, or something similar. And there is typically a self-certification process saying that you have studied up on it, you know that you have a qualified disability, and that you are eligible because that disability onset occurred before age 26. I want to cover some types of disabilities here where maybe you didn't start experiencing them until later in life, but they still might have occurred before age 26. One example of this is retinitis pigmentosa. Retinitis pigmentosa is a genetic condition, and while many people with RP do not find themselves to be legally blind until they are older than age 26, they had RP when they were born because their genetics said they did. So someone with RP who maybe started to lose their vision rapidly in their 40s or their 50s still would be eligible to open an ABLE account, according to the guidance that the ABLE National Resource Center has been providing for the last 10 years or so. So opening an ABLE account can help you to develop that Life Happens Fund as well as develop those investments. The final thing I want to talk about, and then I want to open it up for questions for as long as we have time for, is this. Goal setting is super important. If you don't have a reason, if you don't have a goal that you are trying to achieve, then it is not always likely that you are going to find yourself being a particularly good manager of your money. Why do I say that? Well, because there's not a lot of reason to make a budget that prioritizes saving or that prioritizes investing. There's not a lot of reason to cut your expenses, or to get yourself out of debt. So setting goals is the driver for doing all of the other things that I mentioned. They're the reason that you want to invest. They're the reason you want to get out of debt. They're the reason that you want to develop a Life Happens Fund. And they're the reason that you want to budget your money wisely so that you're able to do all of those other things. A good goal is specific. It is measurable. You can figure out how much progress you're making towards that goal. It is achievable. It is not a goal that you think you'll never get to. It isn't a wish. It isn't a hope. It is a goal that you believe that you can achieve. Now, I will say that my personal belief is even the largest goals are achievable if you turn them into enough smaller goals and you achieve one goal at a time. It may take you a long, long time, but there are instances throughout history where people have achieved seemingly unachievable goals. That's how we have things like the pyramids in Egypt. It's how we have cathedrals that took hundreds of years to build, mostly in Europe. A lot of other wonders of the world are because people had very, very big goals, and they found ways to chunk them down into as many achievable bite-sized goals as possible, and they were able to measure their progress, and they were able to continue to be persistent until they achieved their final goal. A goal must be relevant to you, to your family, to other goals that you have, and it must be timely. Timely means I want to do this in a certain time frame, or I want to thought of another way. A goal could be that is timely, could have a time component to it. As an example, a goal might be after I've created my budget, I know that I should be able to set aside $100 a month to build up my Life Happens Fund. So a goal that I might have might be to set aside $100 a month into my Life Happens Fund for the next 12 months without stopping. Now, does that necessarily get you to a goal of having 3 to 6 or 12 months worth of expenses in your Life Happens Fund? Nope, but it's a good start. And by being able to achieve that goal, it may then add some fuel to the fire, making you want to try to put aside $110 a month in your second year, $120 in your third year. And though it may take years, you will be able to get there. These are the kinds of things that Penny Forward focuses on. And our focus is on education. Our hope is to persuade you that you can be a capable money manager. It's not to persuade you that you need to manage your money entirely on your own. It is to persuade you that you should play an active role in your money management, whether that be if your spouse primarily is the manager of your family's money. Playing an active role for you might be having regular conversations with your spouse to understand how that money is being managed and to insert your opinions about how that might change on a regular basis. If you're working with a financial advisor, it means knowing what questions to ask and knowing how to understand the feedback that your financial advisor is giving you and being able to independently provide opinions to your financial advisor about how your money should be managed. In other words, it is being in many cases, it is being an active and contributing member of the team that manages your finances. And then, of course, for some of us, as I said before, we may find ourselves eventually interested in the details of money management enough that we want or need to do it entirely on our own. And some of us can and should and will do that. I'll stop there and see if there are any questions, any hands raised, anything that anyone wants to contribute before I turn it back over to Steve.
Steve, we did have one email from Sheila Gunn.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and read that?
She wanted to know the difference between a money market savings and a money market fund.
That's a good question. And I said I would cover funds, and then I glossed over it as I was looking at the clock. So it's a good opportunity to come back to that. Money market savings account is a savings account typically provided by a bank. It is insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. In many cases, it has it earns interest. Sometimes that interest is higher than the interest you might earn on a regular savings account. In some cases, it may or may not be higher than interest you might earn from a high yield savings account as well. Money market accounts sometimes require a relatively large minimum balance in order to keep them open, and they may also provide some checking account like features, like being able to write checks out of your money market account. A money market fund, on the other hand, is a type of fund that is traded on the securities market. It is not FDIC insured, so you could potentially lose money by investing in a money market fund. It's definitely something to check into, though it is considered to be a relatively safe investment or a relatively conservative investment compared to other types of funds. What is a fund anyway? Well, in the world of investing, we have shares of stock in companies that we can purchase. So we actually own little tiny pieces of a company. You can buy bonds, which are essentially contracts to loan money to governments or sometimes companies. Funds do that purchasing for you. You contribute money into a fund, which is a pool of money that may consist of your money along with the money from maybe hundreds, maybe thousands, maybe millions of other individuals, as well as investment institutions like Fidelity or BlackRock or Schwab, et cetera. And that money is invested by a fund manager in stocks, bonds, a combination of both, or potentially a cash equivalent investment like money market accounts. Money market accounts, as well as money market funds, invest in short-term interest-bearing instruments that tend to be fairly safe. They tend to earn low interest, but they do provide a little bit of income. And when you invest in a money market fund or a money market account, both you and the bank earn some money off of that interest. There are other types of funds. There are stock-only funds. There are funds that contain a mixture of stocks and bonds. There are funds that invest in commodities such as gold, silver, platinum, other precious metals, oil, even commodities such as food, wheat, corn, you know, cattle, pigs, things like this, as well as something that's become in vogue lately, cryptocurrencies. There are funds for all of those. There are actively managed funds that are managed by a person who is considered to be an expert in investing and will buy and sell investments to achieve a certain goal. There are passively managed funds that are managed essentially by a computer, and their goal is usually to track a market index like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ 100, or other lesser known indices. There are also two types of funds when it comes to how they're traded. Mutual funds are they're an older type of fund. They are traded at the end of the trading day. The stock market is open from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Eastern time, and mutual funds are traded at the close of every stock trading day. Exchange-traded funds can be traded anytime throughout the day. They can be bought and sold and bought and sold again as many times as you want. And so some people prefer them over mutual funds because of that flexibility. Though there aren't a ton of differences between exchange-traded funds and mutual funds, both of them can be managed actively or passively. They both can be stock funds, bond funds, or a mixture of both, as well as invest in commodities and other things. I hope that covered your question in detail, Sheila. I didn't want to spend too much time on it. Are there other questions?
We do have area code 951. Go ahead. I don't know how much time you want to give to questions, but...
Area code 951.
You can unmute. There you go.
Oh, here we go. I was having a hard... My name is Nancy Unger. I have a couple... I need to have your contact information. Is there a certain income range for financial advisor, certified financial advisors? I don't mean Bernie Madoffs, you know, people who are bonded. And also, if, you know, how debit cards don't have the same protection, or if someone takes your debit card, you can contact the bank. But what do you say about using debit cards? And a lot of times, if you don't have a little credit, you cannot get things done. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. That's quite a few questions. I'll try to remember and get to them all as quickly as possible. And I'll also leave it up to the convention organizers to cut me off whenever, because I don't recall how much time.
We got started a little bit late, so if we can, you know, answer this question and maybe one more.
Okay, thank you, Steve. All right, so certified financial planners, in theory, can work with anyone of any income level. That said, many financial planners prefer to work with people of a specific type of income level. There are some that would prefer to work with people on the higher end of the income spectrum because it makes them more money. There are others who really like working with lower or middle class investors because they really want to provide the help, and the income isn't so important to them. It really depends on the individual, but there is no lower limit or upper limit for that matter when it comes to working with a financial advisor like a certified financial planner. Credit cards versus debit cards, I think, was the other thing you asked about. It is true that it can be easier to dispute a transaction with a credit card. It is not typically impossible to dispute a transaction that is fraudulent that occurs on a debit card. I've done it. And the one major downside to debit cards when it comes to disputing transactions is that typically the bank doesn't refund your money for the fraud until they've completed their investigation, and that investigation can sometimes take 30 or 45 days or more. And in the case of many credit card companies, they will reverse the transaction almost immediately, and so that it doesn't appear on your statement, and then complete their investigation after having done that. So that is one advantage of using a credit card. And some people, really prefer to use credit cards for some things because of that, for that reason. And if you're able to do that and pay your credit card balance off in full every month, then that ought to be fine for you. I will give my contact information out as well before we wrap things up. One more question.
Thank you.
Okay. Nellie, go ahead.
Hi, Nellie.
Hi. Thank you for this very informative presentation. So my question is about the ABLE account.
Yeah.
If an individual wants to open an ABLE account, do they approach a financial institution like a bank and say that they want to open an ABLE account? How does that work?
That's a good question. Most ABLE programs allow you to open the ABLE account through a website online, and they also may be able to mail you paper forms that you can fill out and mail back on your own, and a financial advisor may be willing to help you with that. The thing you have to know about financial advisors, though, is that there are financial advisors that charge a fee to meet with them, typically by the hour. And then there are financial advisors who make money off of the investments that they sell to you or they manage for you. And though that second type of advisor may be less willing to help you open your Able account because they don't really make money off of spending that time with you. There is one Able program. It's called Able America, that is available to be managed by traditional investment advisors. And so if your investment advisor is able to open an Able America account for you and manage it for you, then that might be a way to go about it as well. And I will mention, even though I don't think, I'm assuming that the majority of you are in California, the Able program in Maine is actually managed by a bank, and only in Maine can you go into a bank branch and open an Able account there in person. Otherwise, in all of the other Able programs I know of, it must be done online or through paper forms by mail.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. I think we're getting short on time, so I'll quickly give out my contact information. If you have questions, you can send those questions to me by email at pennyforward@pennyforward.com. Happy to answer quick questions that way. If it's a more complicated discussion, I may ask that you make an appointment, and I may ask that you pay a fee for that appointment. We do prioritize our paying members, and so paid members will get priority on appointments over non-paying members. They also get a discount on their appointments as well, by the way. You can also try to give us a call. Our phone number is 888-332-5558. Again, that number is 888-332-5558. That number is answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by an answering service. They are not financial experts. They will be able to take messages. They will try to transfer you to myself or Jenny Holcomb if you need a work incentive practitioner during business hours. They can also help you to schedule appointments and to sign up for a paid Penny Forward membership. They do have a list of frequently asked questions that they can also help you with as well. But do be patient with them. They are not financial experts. And then finally, I just want to mention that, I mentioned this at the beginning as well, our paid memberships cost $99 a year or $9.99 a month. We currently have a discount going on, which we intend to continue throughout the end of 2025, where we're offering your first year of membership for $49. Paid members get access to all of our online courses. You take those through our website. So if you don't do websites, this may not be of interest to you. We also offer weekly workshops over Zoom, as well as one-on-one financial counseling. Paid members get access to two free counseling appointments per calendar year, and additional appointments are $50 per hour. I am happy to make appointments with people who do not wish to become paid members. Those appointments are charged at a rate of $100 per hour, so you can see where having a paid membership immediately pays off. And we are also supported by your donations. We provide our memberships very, very affordably, and they do not make up the bulk of our funding. So if you have the means and are able to support us through a one-time or recurring monthly donation, that would be very, very welcome. We accept cash, securities, and even volunteering, if you happen to have an expertise in personal finance, would be most welcome as well. I would love to talk with you in more detail about that. Again, pennyforward@pennyforward.com is our email address. 888-332-5558 is our phone number. And thank you all for your time. I hope you're having a wonderful convention.
Chris, you met and exceeded my expectations. This is a great bunch of information, and I'm glad the session will be recorded because I can see us offering this to folks who weren't able to make the session today. So thank you for your time and your expertise, and I think folks may be contacting you at the website. So thanks a lot for spending time with us here this morning, or this afternoon for you. I guess this afternoon here, too.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Steve.
All right. So we're going to take a break for lunch and come back at 1 o'clock with the Blind History Lady. And
Steve, real quick, I did get an email from Sheila saying that the website is calable, calable.ca.gov, just for those who may want that.
Yeah, thank you, Sheila. That was, I was trying to remember. I thought it was calable.gov, and I would have been wrong, so I so appreciate you checking that out because, yeah, that's a wealth of information. Yeah, calable.ca.gov. Thank you for that. Okay, so we'll do the Blind History Lady at 1 o'clock, and some more information, some more discussion of advocacy, and a special treat for you sports fans this afternoon. So come back for that. We'll break again. We'll have our banquet starting at 5 o'clock tonight. Right after the banquet, we're going to be having our virtual happy hour. Joe Green and the membership folks are going to run that right after the banquet. That'll be on the pre-convention line. Then, of course, tomorrow morning our business meeting starting at 9 a.m. Pacific. So thank you all for being here. Everybody go have some lunch, and we'll see you back here at 1 o'clock.
Stopping the stream. Close the room.